So we probably should get rolling, but Ross seems to be offline at the moment.
Everybody's offline.
And McKenna's nowhere to be found yet.
Did I hear a thingy?
No, I just tried.
See Ross.
It says called failed.
I see.
He's offline, I think. So he should be joining us shortly, but we should probably get going, which means I probably should send some kind of intro here. Oh, damn. You know what? Okay, wait a minute. 6 minutes. Okay, the call is being timed. I just realized I'm not recording this in the normal program. I'm doing this in the Skype recording program.
Oh.
So I don't have the typical time marks that I'm used to using now. That's okay. 7 minutes in. It couldn't have been 7 minutes and 80 seconds. Maybe 8 seconds. How about that? I don't think there are 7 minutes and 80 seconds without getting to 8 minutes. Anyway, I should just say, welcome to a special edition of Magic Chat After Dark, our set review.
It is after dark.
Yeah, it's always after dark when we record. This is our set review show for Aether Revolt. Took me a minute to think of the name.
Right.
We're recording this on January 17th, 2017. Mike, let's chat.
Yo, this card sucks. Yo, this card sucks. Yo, this card sucks.
You just give it to that buck.
Should I do it with my left hand?
You just give it to that buck.
Should I do it with my left hand? No, it just hurts.
Joining me at the moment, I'll get to finish the intro here.
Okay, my bad. It's been a little while.
Welcome to Magic Chat After Dark.
Magic Chat After Dark.
I'm your host, Dan Levant. Joining me at the moment is the voice of reason, Mr. Michael Fitzgerald.
Hello.
That's where you say hello.
Hello.
Joining us soon will be hopefully Mr. Ross Merriam and, of course, Mr. Michael McKenna, whose nickname I've completely forgotten. Did we ever have a nickname for him?
The lovely and talented.
The lovely and talented Mr. Michael McKenna, of course.
Yes.
What I did with the opening show. So we were talking about grapes. No, we're talking about magic cards.
Yes.
So I figured, since Mike was joining us late and he wrote up copious notes that he emailed me but are completely illegible in the email.
Because did he, like, take a screenshot of his work?
No, it did that thing where it breaks it down and then puts a little arrow at the end of every sentence that it randomly makes. It turns your sentences into paragraphs with little arrows on the end. It's really confusing to look at.
Yeah.
But I figured we could start by talking about the banned and restricted list.
Yeah.
Chat about that. I thought we'd have Ross here, but he can chime in when he gets here. Considering we have the two most brilliant minds of the show on at the moment.
Yes, and the people who play the least amount of Magic.
Yes, the least experienced among us.
Let's see. That was January 9th, right? Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember it's in Modern, it was G-Probe, Cataxian
yep.
Probe, and Golgari Grave Troll. And in Standard, it was the Looter Scooter, the Reflector Mage, right? And Frick was the third one.
Emrakul, the Promised End.
Emrakul, of course. The marquee card of the set is banned.
Yep. That's the second time the marquee card of a set has been banned in Standard.
What was the other one? Jace?
Wasn't Jace the, like, headliner for that set?
Worldwake?
Yeah, wasn't he wasn't he one of the driving story figures? That was before my time.
He might have been. I don't know.
See, somebody listening is screaming because I've got this really wrong, so we'll just assume I'm wrong. I just remember there being a lot of art with him,
I'm sure there is. Yeah,
but yeah, Emrakul is definitely what the whole thing is based around, and sorry kids, can't play her anymore.
Nope, absolutely not. Yeah, Jace is on the Jace is pretty well featured even in the art that's on it, because I looked up the product information page from Wizards, and you scroll down, it says products, product information, and then under cards, the card it's showing is Jace the Mind Sculptor.
Right. So, well, that could also be a, what do you call it?
Retconning?
Yeah, retconning.
Retconning our product information.
How are you feeling about them?
I don't play standards, so I'm feeling actually delighted that the Looter Scooter got banned, because now I can afford a set.
To do what with?
I don't know. Probably throw in a modern deck or something. I don't know. I have wanted a set. It's not at all surprising, I think, that the first time ever that they did vehicles, that they would miss badly on one of them.
Right.
And either make it banned or make it close to needing to be banned. Because they kind of did that with equipment. I mean, in the first go-around, they ran out Skull Clamp, and shortly after that, in the very next set, Umezawa's Jitte.
Right.
And it took them a while to figure out
how to make
sweet
it so we
spot.
Wouldn't use it at all.
Well, there's that too. Yeah, have they printed a really good piece of equipment in? I can't think of the last one.
Swords? Oh, McKenna's online. He sent you a friend request.
Oh, he is. How come I'm not seeing his friend request? Don't I already have him?
I don't know.
Do, 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 do.
Let's see, I'll ask him what his thing is.
Do, 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 do. Yeah, ask him what his thing is.
Let's see. What saw a lot of play? The spear, rune whatever spear. That saw a lot of play in Delver. And then...
Yeah.
Mortar Pod saw a decent amount of play.
Yeah. That's
but
still...
it wasn't.
It's been a while.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it really was quite a long time ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think equipment is one of those funny things that it's either utterly oppressive or not very good. And there's, you know, and it's only in very high powered formats that you get to see it, as a choice that's really hard to make. A la, you know, there's just not a heck of a lot of Batterskulls being played in the world anymore.
Yeah. Hold on, I think I can hear. Whoa.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
Oh, there he is. The man of the hour.
Can you hear me okay?
The lovely and talented. I can hear you just fine.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you wonderfully.
Can you hear me?
Excellent.
Have we started recording yet, or can I make some popped corn?
We are recording.
Ah, there we go.
But you can also make popcorn, I think.
All right, yes. I'll be right back.
You can make popcorn.
Did you get my notes, Dan? They're good notes.
They're completely illegible in the way you sent them to me.
Perfect. I did it on my phone. One sec.
Yeah. I don't know where Ross is, though.
Yeah, this is weird.
Like, the one guy that was like, yeah, let's do this.
Definitely be there.
I'll definitely be there just hours ago.
Let me see. I'm gonna look him up on the interwebs. I think I have a little Ross action. Maybe no. I'll just do it this way. This works better. Are you online, Ross? Oh, he's online.
I'm not showing him online on my Skype.
He's online Facebook.
Ah.
Or at least it says he is. We don't know if that's a lie or not.
Or he could just be AFK, and his computer could be online.
Could be asleep again.
What is the? I'm trying to think of anything in recent history for equipment that was.
He's seen it. 1029. It says he saw it, but he hasn't commented. Oh wait, he's typing.
Oh, did you PM him there?
He says I am in Burlham. So send him another thing.
He's offline though.
He says RC Merriam. Are you looking at RC Merriam?
View profile. No, I think I have Facebook.ross.merriam thing or something. RC, tell him to send me a friend request. He might not know it. How do I send him a friend request? RC Merriam.
Okay, I told him to send you a thing and send him your message. I mean, your whatever. Man, I'm out of practice. It is like...
Hold on. Oh, I think I got it here.
Oh.
Let me get back to
maybe.
The call.
Maybe.
How do I get back to the screen where the call is? Of course, I don't know how to do that. There it is. There we go. Okay, so I sent him a friend request. We'll see what happens here. Oh, Ross Merriam is online.
What?
Let's see if we can get him in on the call. Of course, that Ross Merriam isn't showing. This is exciting radio, I got to tell you.
I have a question. Do our listeners like the munching of popcorn?
No.
Historically, I think that they love it, actually. If I ring.
Hello.
Hey, Ross. Ross?
Yeah?
Can you hear us?
Oh,
I can.
He's back.
Yes, the gang is all here.
Ooh, hold on
a
second.
Gang of thieves.
Yeah, what's up, love?
As it were. Oh. Who was that addressed to?
Gentlemen, I'll be right back. My girlfriend sprained her ankle, and I have to go change her ice.
Oh, yes, of course. Are you back, McKenna?
Oh, I'm here.
Are you there, Ross?
I thought McKenna was supposed to be late.
He was late.
He was late.
I was late.
I guess it is 10:30 already.
It is 10:30.
I lost track of time.
That's fine. We're all on here now. Fitz and I were just talking a little bit, being the two most experienced players in this group, about the bannings recently.
Okay.
So, hop in. What are your thoughts? Looter Scooter getting banned. I don't know. I haven't played Standard much, so I didn't have many thoughts on that.
So, as a player, my view towards bans has generally, from that specific perspective, has been to just deal with them and not have too much of an emotional reaction to cards being gone. Like my job as a player is to take the rules of deck construction that they give me and do the best I can with them. And so regardless of what those rules are, my job doesn't really much change. There is the added benefit that I get to work on a new format when Standard had been pretty stale over the last 2 months. So I enjoy that aspect of it. I understand the people who are upset about their investment being taken out from under them, especially cards that have only been around for 3 or 6 months. But the reality is that there comes a point where that consideration becomes smaller than the consideration that people are not enjoying Standard and are not showing up. Attendance numbers were certainly down. Viewership numbers were down. People did not like the Standard format. And so action has to be taken. I was expecting Emrakul to be banned. I was surprised about the other two. I have a feeling that they did some last minute sort of retesting of the format, because it was my understanding that they had not pegged Reflector Mage even from the outset as a constructed card. They pushed it to be better and limited for the blue-white decks in the limited format.
Yeah.
And so I don't know what their policy is, but I would imagine that they took whatever data they have for Magic Online and did some testing with just an Emrakul ban, or at least that's what I hope they did, and came to find out that the blue-white deck was just too good. And then so that they were going to have to get rid of Smuggler's Copter, which was just ubiquitous in so many decks. It was like GTA in that respect. And then the Reflector Mage was sort of over the top in making sure the blue-white deck wasn't too good and might have just been too good once they found out that they accidentally put an infinite combo Splinter Twin deck in the format. So I have a feeling they did a lot of sort of preemptive things, and I hope that they took some time out with the Future League to retest the format once they got the information on the stuff they missed and found that there were going to be broken things and that was going to be an issue at this Pro Tour.
Yeah. I was just saying I didn't find it super surprising that they would end up making a vehicle that ended up being too powerful because it's a really new car type.
I wrote an article to that effect.
Oh, there you go.
Kalidus spoiler season.
Yeah, because, I mean, they did the same thing with equipment when they first came out with
exactly.
It.
Exactly. Skullclamp and GTA and Swords. And they did the same thing with Planeswalkers, too.
Yes.
Jace, obviously. But Elspeth was also obscenely powerful, as was Ajani. These were cards that were ubiquitous cards in their formats until they figured out exactly how to design them at an appropriate power level.
Yeah.
I think also, and I have limited experience in this context, I the way people say Reflector Mage, I think reveals the deep and empowered hatred many people have both for that card and the style of play that card inspired over the time that it spent in Magic. It is suffocating to the sort of person who likes to smash things with creatures. And the fact that it's amazing on turn 3 and amazing on like turn 12 in most Magic games is like very impressive for the card that it is. I was not surprised. I thought that was actually the other one seemed actually kind of like no-brainers. I thought Emrakul was weirdly oppressive. They tweaked it just a little over the top and it just was too good to avoid playing, and there was essentially it made it slightly no reason not to bend your strategy towards playing it. And then Smuggler's Copter, as you said, was so ubiquitous. But, like, I just think that that was a really bold move for them to say, you know what, this card kind of sucks. Like, this card kind of makes everything suck. So we're going to take it out and then let people kind of do what we need to do afterwards. I thought it was, I was happy to see it as a change.
Yeah, I think, I'm assuming a lot in giving WotC credit that they've done at least some minimal testing and come away with real data in that regard and made the decision based on that rather than what they talked about in the in Sam Stoddard's article when he mentioned Magic Online data saying that the blue-white deck was favored against everything in the format except for black-red aggro, and it was 49-51 in that matchup, which sort of flies in the face of the common wisdom that black-red Delirium was a lot better than blue-white. I am assuming a lot, but I tend to be pretty optimistic with these things. I give Wizards a pretty good benefit of the doubt as long as they are transparent with a lot of their decisions. Mm-hmm. I don't think they were quite as transparent as they could have been with this one, especially with the initial announcement. And then Stoddard had to, I don't know if you'd, they had always planned on releasing that article later in the week, but he ended up doing so. And it didn't add a ton other than the Magic Online anecdote. But the reality was this was a format where you literally had to play one of those two cards, Smuggler's Copter or Emrakul. And as the format got figured out, it became more and more about Emrakul. Mm. And so you knew that they pretty much had to ban Emrakul. And once they did that, they ran the risk of having a format where you absolutely had to play Smuggler's Copter. And especially once they found out about Felidar Guardian, like, can you imagine playing into deck with just Thraven Inspector, Smuggler's Copter, Saheeli Rai, Reflector Mage, Felidar Guardian, any other series of cards? Like, it would have been such an obvious best deck. I believe that deck would have been incredible because it would have had a strong aggressive game plan. It would have had a bunch of ways to abuse its copter, which effectively to crew the copter effectively. It would use the loot to set up the combo. You can play the mana in this format is great. So I could see a version of the deck where you start with Thraven Inspector and Copter, and if there are one or two more ways to generate artifacts, you can also maybe play Toolcraft Exemplar and get more aggressive. You can play Spire of Industry and have really good mana. The ways to build on that core are endless, and it's just so obvious that this felt like a time when it really called for being proactive and preemptive, and so I'm glad they did that. Because having a Pro Tour where everybody knows what the best deck is going to be going in is just really devastating for them.
Yeah,
and to have the entirety of the new set overshown by a random uncommon that you thought was going to be a limited card is similarly embarrassing.
Yeah.
Thoughts on the modern bans?
Cataxian Probe is one of my favorite cards of all time, but even I recognize that one of the reasons that is true is because the card is just stupid. it's just so easy to play games with perfect information, and it just abuses things on so many different levels. It makes Delve incredible. It makes your decks more consistent almost all the time. It goes well with all of these instant and sorcery things that are popping up. The life being paid was good in Death Shadow aggro. There were some people trying to play this card in fair decks, but the vast majority of them were doing it to kill you on turn three, and that is against their stated goals for Modern. We saw a year of Modern where the format was about as fast as it had ever been since the early bannings of Ponder, Preordain, and Rite of Flame and such. So I think some bans to slow down the format were in order. What was the other card that got banned?
Grateful. Oh,
Dredge, yeah. And then obviously Dredge got banned because everyone hates Dredge.
Yeah.
I think people tend to overrate the metric of this deck is oppressive and underrate the metric of this deck makes people have a bad time playing Magic.
Yeah.
And it's really the latter metric that is that's surpassed much more often. And those cards still cause people to not show up.
Yeah.
I perpetuated it, but...
I think that's the gimmick is that there's the secret part where a card is an outside threat to business, and those are not card, but decks are an outside threat to business are one of the things they think about. They have to, you know, if this actually seems like enough people are upset about it that they might skip a weekend event, that's a thing ultimately, and it's also shitty for coverage because Dredge is the fucking worst.
Yeah, I had a good time. That's I'll say that. My opponents, maybe not so much. I also thought the games were pretty interesting when I was playing with the deck. Like, all the cool loam tricks that you did, and the looming and playing a bunch of lands and casting Golgari Grave Trolls as a way to beat people. I also thought it was really funny anytime I put in, like, 9 power into play in turn 2, and my opponent untapped and cast a Rest in Peace. Those might have been my favorite games, where they just had their hate card, they had it about as early as they possibly could, maybe one turn later, and it's just, nah, that's just not good enough, sorry. 2 mana is just too slow, you should have known. That's so much.
Mainline or go home.
It's 2 more than 0.
So what happened in Modern that ended up accelerating the format? Because G-Probe's been in there since the beginning.
Well, there's nothing really specific that happens that speeds up the format, but formats naturally grow faster as you add sets to them. And Standard solves that inevitability issue with a rotation, but Modern is specifically non-rotating, so your cards don't lose value, because that's an important aspect too. And so the reality is this issue with Modern is structural, and it's not going away. We're going to constantly have this issue come up, and that's why the ban list needs to be regulated more heavily than in a format like Standard. Because the ban list is the only way they can do that without implementing rotation, which is obviously not a solution.
Right.
No, that's the whole purpose of Modern, is to have a non-rotating format that was more accessible than Legacy and Vintage. Yeah.
Well, the Golgari Grave Troll was fine when they unbanned it, but then they printed Price Amalgam and Cathartic Reunion. And those are also individually fine cards to print. But there's always going to come a time where you have too many surrounding them. And that's why cards like Golgari Grave Troll or other powerful enabler cards are cards that need to be banned in Modern, because those are the cards that either limit your design space later on because you're afraid of breaking the format, which is bad, or they just cause the format to become broken whenever you ignore that. Because I don't think Wizards tests Modern that actively. So
no, I don't think they do.
Frequently they'll just print a card, and if they end up ruining Modern for 3 months, then so be it, we'll ban the card.
It's my understanding they don't test for any of the Eternal formats. They just test for Standard, basically. I mean, they're aware of the other formats, and they probably have some idea of, wow, we think this card may impact those formats, but I don't think they actively test them.
Yeah, I agree. That is my understanding as well.
So are Dredge and Death Shadow just dead now as decks? So
Death Shadow is hurt by losing Gitaxian Probe. Of course, I think that would probably be enough by itself to at least push the deck to the fringe. But the printing of Fatal Push is also really devastating for that deck, because now there are going to be so many more decks with good, cheap interaction for your large creatures.
Yeah.
So as a 1-2 combo, I think that deck is gone. Dredge, I can see existing in some form, but again, it's just not going to be the deck it was. Yeah, you can replace Grave Troll with Golgari Thug, and some of your draws are still going to be like just as good. But the difference between 4 and 6 in that deck is pretty significant. And you have to realize that you're dredging maybe 3 or 4 times on the first 2 turns if all goes well, and if 2 of those dredges are 6 carders instead of, or 4 carders instead of 6 carders. You're missing 4 cards out of maybe 20. And so that's a 20% decrease in the number of cards you see. That those numbers with those decreases on an expected value perspective combined with the natural variance of Dredge push the distribution down enough that you're going to have a lot more games where you don't get to kill them on turn 4. And you're gonna have a lot more games where your opponent's hate is then really good, because you're gonna put 6 power into play instead of 9, and then they're gonna be able to stabilize against your 6 power.
Yeah.
So those games and all those small shifts need to do is add up to 5 to 6 percentage points in your overall win rate, and that's enough to make the deck bad. And my guess is it adds up to maybe 3 or 4 percentage points in your overall win rate, and so the deck is just one of those sort of tier three options in Modern. But it's going to be one that can, I think, eventually be repurposed into something really good, depending upon what they print later on. Because you can potentially either have another really strong enabler get printed so that you get 5 or 6 dredges consistently by that time, at which point dredging 4 or 5 at a time is good enough to do what you need, or you have such a so many strong recursive graveyard creatures that you have a deck that, rather than relying on its speed, relies on resiliency and can still have some potentially explosive draws. If the format with Fatal Push slows down, something like that could work out. Maybe you play Scrap Heap Scroungers and things like that.
It's still a fairly budget deck too, isn't it, as far as Modern goes?
Bloodghast shot up for a bit. The lands are expensive, but that's true of basically every deck in the format. That's reasonable. Like Blackleaf Cliffs are expensive too, although that's the one that actually doesn't get played as much. How much are Copperline Gorges? Aren't as much. They're like $6 or $7. That's the one that everyone plays.
I think so.
You can either play a fetch land list or with more Scars lands and 5-color lands. So yeah, I don't know. It's probably not
around
too expensive.
20 right now.
The cost of cards is not something I concern myself with, Dan.
I realize that.
Poppy got swag. That's all I'll say.
Well, we probably should move on. Are you still there, McKenna? I don't hear him.
Yeah, I don't hear him either. He sort of suggested that maybe he didn't want to make too much noise eating, and then he disappeared.
Yeah, I've been eating
I said he can't have dessert. Are you guys not keeping dessert. Tabs on this?
I can popcorn. Make crunching noises if you'd like.
No, I...
As long as what you're eating is savory.
I was just making sure you were still on the line because I figured we'd start, we'd dive into the set review stuff.
Well, it's like I get to listen to a podcast while I eat.
Mm.
That I'm also kind of a part of.
And to be fair, if he lets the cheese cool, we've discussed that it's a problem.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, it's our podcast you're listening to while you eat, so you may get
not so great for the stomach.
Nope. So where do we want to start with this? Let's talk about the, I don't know, what do we want to talk about?
I like that McKenna has actually prepared, but is now too busy eating to contribute.
He also sent me a list that was completely illegible, basically.
Oh, wildly unreadable.
Completely unreadable.
Well, do you want me to go by my list? I will try my best to decipher what I wrote.
What is the premise of the list? Is it things that will be good in Standard? Is it best cards? Is this best speculations? What are we talking
about? Well, I noticed in there you made some broad statements about the set altogether. I think we could probably save those towards the end, kind of like
So Dan read the first two lines.
I did. That's about as far as I got before my eyes crossed.
I did them in order of Mythic Rare in whatever that site is, Mythic Spoiler.
Okay.
Okay, let's start with Mythics then.
Okay, first one I had was, I'll say the card name and you can read what it does. Exquisite Angel.
It's actually Exquisite Archangel.
Well, now it's Exquisite.
You had one job. You gave up the other job. You're like, no, I'm going to concentrate on this. I know I can nail that part.
And nope.
5 and 2 white for a creature angel. It's a 5/5. It has flying. If you would lose the game, instead, exile Exquisite Archangel, and your life total becomes equal to your starting life total. The quote is, a living invention born of a grand design.
Fun fact, this will not save you from dying to infect, if that's relevant to anybody.
In fact, it'll not save you from dying ever, because it'll never see play.
This card will absolutely be played by somebody somewhere.
Played constantly in Commander. That is just a guaranteed fact.
I don't know about that.
Somebody will see a 7-mana 5/5 that gains you 40 life, and they'll be like, that's what I want.
So the jumbled words I wrote were casual appeal, will keep it out of bulk, but it will never be exciting or more than $5.
That sounds right. The art is beautiful, though, by the way.
It is. Well, most, like, Mythic Angels are like, casual fodder anyway.
Yeah. I mean,
like angels, big angels and dragons. People just love those kinds of cards pretty much all the time.
I do constantly feel like the ways they try to shoehorn angels and dragons into whatever like visual palette it is, or like is my least favorite thing that happens.
Dragons.
Like, how can we make this angel look like it comes from the machine plane? Like, what if we gave it a huge hat? You're like, yeah, extra arms, and that's what they came up with.
I think dragons are the worst. Whenever I saw a dragon in the original Innistrad set, I was like, no,
oh, it was so good.
Easy
no.
Now.
Like
we
nails
will get
on
to
a chalkboard.
The Pearl Jam dragon later. The Pearl Jam region, I believe its name is.
This is just up here on the screen, but the art on Ghirapur Osprey is really lovely.
Dude, we're not there yet. Calm down.
It's on the same page as the Exquisite Archangel, though. It is on my screen.
Well, technically, they're all on the same page, Dan.
It's on the same row.
No, it isn't.
So we will let Ross talk about the good cards, and since this entire set is bulk, Russ, we're done. Thanks for coming on the show.
You need your easiest set review ever.
I don't think the entire set is bulk, but...
Speaking of bulk, mechanized production.
That's bulk.
That's 2/2 blue for an enchantment aura. Enchant artifact you control. At the beginning of your upkeep, create a token that's a copy of enchanted artifact. Oh. Then, if you control 8 or more artifacts, you win the game and you win. Oh, with the same name as one another, you win the game.
All right, I have a sweet story about this. So, Joan and I went to do the Two-Headed Giant pre-release at John Carlos' store. And in our second round, we were playing against a couple of kids that were like 12 or something like that.
Oh my God, those fucking kids were insufferable.
They were awesome. Are you kidding me? They were like Tom and Jerry. Because the one who stereotypically had the glasses was very serious and intellectual, and his buddy was like a chihuahua, jumping up and down at the table the whole time.
Yeah, I can't handle
and
that kid.
He cast – so he had the vehicle, the 4/4 with trample, and he cast this enchantment on it. So he was making a copy of this book, and we were dead. We were just – they killed us in like 2 swings. But – I was like, you know, it would be really cool for style points. I said, if you won by making 8 copies of that and didn't attack us. And his buddy was all over it. He wanted to win that way so badly. But his friend was like, nope, turn him sideways. All right, we're dead.
So I've now seen this card twice in Limited. At the Temple pre-release, Adrian had it on Deadlock Trap. Which was great, by the way. That was awesome. He eventually just got to 8/1, obviously, because how do you win through that? And I had someone play it against me in a team draft tonight where they put it on, like, Pacification Array, I think it's called, the 1-mana pay 2 Icy Manipulator thing.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I won anyway because this card's not good.
It's fun.
Dare we say EDH?
I wouldn't even play this in EDH.
Yes, you would play it.
Not. Nope. And I have an artifact deck, and I would not play this card.
Well, that reminds me of Herald of Anguish.
That's a 5/2 black for a creature demon. It's a 5/5. It has improvise. Oh, we didn't go over the keywords. Improvise.
Well, why don't you explain improvise to us?
Improvise. Your artifacts can help cast this spell. Can I... By the way,
it's Convoke for Artifacts.
It's Convoke for Artifacts, but it's the way it says your artifacts can help cast this spell feels
halfway
like...
Halfway through Goodwill Hunting, you tell everyone that he's a genius.
Well, that's how they reworded the reminder text on Convoke, too.
Dude, I hate it, though. It sounds like a card that's made just for the beginner decks that come free, like, the little ones. Your artifacts can help cast this spell. Each artifact you tap after you're done activating mana abilities pays for 1 colorless. It's just the way it's very articulate, but
it's
I despise
silly.
It. It has flying. At the beginning of your end step, each opponent discards a card. For 1 and a black, sacrifice an artifact, target creature gets -2/-2 until end of turn.
See, this one I can see throwing in an EDH deck. That second ability is sweet.
Cheating mana cost is always powerful.
I've been putting this in constructed decks, so...
I think this card's...
Really?
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh.
It has a really high ceiling.
Yeah.
If it stays in play against any creature deck, they can't ever win.
Yep. I don't know.
Yeah. Yes.
It needs the supporting cast, and maybe Ross can build that deck.
It just seems like it would consistently come out on 4 or 5 in that deck, and that's pretty great.
And if it does, it's huge.
Yeah.
I don't know what the deck is for it, though. I just know it's good.
What is the deck for it, Ross?
Ross doesn't want to talk about it. That's his coup.
I am working with Tezzeret just to see how far I can push it, and Herald is one of the big things.
It's actually just four of all of the mythics, and then the mana to cast them. It's going to be great.
Oh, no. You need a bunch of cheap, crappy artifacts that you can improvise your cards.
Hey, Prophetic Prism is the fucking best.
Prophetic Prism, but it's the improvised cards are pretty good between that one, Metallic Rebuke, and the Draw 3.
Mm. The Draw 3 seems very good.
What's the name of the Draw 3?
Reverse Engineer.
There you go.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, that's figured an awesome out. Name.
Is it? Yeah.
Oh, there it is. 3 blue, improvised Draw 3 cards. Sorcery.
There you go.
There you go. Straightforward.
So, this is one of the few cards in the set I give a thumbs up to.
Yeah, it's just, is it a rare reverse engineer? Uncommon?
It's uncommon. An uncommon.
That's a good card.
Oh, I was talking about the Herald. It's like one of the few mythics that matter.
I also think improvise is going to be very important in the limited format. All the weird improvised commons are quite good. You just enable them with cheap, crappy artifacts. And
the 5-mana 3/3, I think, is the card that I most want to play with, because it just seems like it's going to get silly over the course of the game to be able to cast tons and tons of them, draw cards, and cast that garbage. I'm very excited.
Yep.
And it adds mana for the next one.
Yeah.
I've yet to draft this set, but I will be this weekend. There's a big draft camp in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area. I don't know exactly where it is.
Draft camp?
Yeah, there's like 60 people or something for this one. It was bigger than I expected it to be.
Holy crap.
I had heard about previous iterations of it, and I assumed it was like 20 people, but it's actually 60. And they had to find an actual space for us to play in cards and everything. And it's like half people that are qualified for the Pro Tour and half people that just enjoy playing Magic, whatever the hell that means.
This loathsome game.
Yeah, I remember those days.
Maybe that's why the pros eventually all don't care about the pictures on the cards, because it's just beaten out of you.
To be fair, I don't think I ever really cared about the pictures on the cards. Maybe occasionally. Like, there were exceptions to the rule. There were a few cards here and there, and a few flavor texts that are cool. Every now and then, they get flavor that hits me, but I don't think it ever was really a huge part of what brought me to the game.
Right.
I actually kind of miss sort of the old flavor text that they used to have back when Rosewater was doing a lot of it or had more influence, and it was clever and funny instead of just, I don't know, just all dedicated to talking about the story of the set. And it's like,
yeah, well, this is what we're stuck with. Ones.
Yeah, Null Rod is the best flavor text. That's,
that's pretty good. Jace drank his cappuccino by the window.
Yeah.
It was dark out. Jace didn't like the dark.
I've always loved the flavor text on Goblin Offensive. That's one of my favorites, too.
They certainly are.
They certainly are. See, there's some really good ones.
It's true.
Yeah.
It makes me sad that they don't do the funny ones as much. But all right, what's the next card on your filler list?
I want a banana this big.
That's not
Gorilla Titan.
That was, pretty awesome. Yeah.
Which
actually, I think Rosewater actually wrote that one in particular, but go ahead.
Lightning Runner!
That would be red, I'm going to bet.
Yeah, it's a 3/2 red for a 2/2 creature human warrior. It has double strike and haste. Whenever Lightning Runner attacks, you get 2 energy. Then you may pay a bunch of energy, which I think is not 9? 8. 8 energy.
8.
If you pay, untap all creatures you control, then, and after this phase, there is an additional combat phase.
Is this the card that has the reminder text for 2 energy, but not the reminder text for 8?
Yes, that's correct. The one.
So just makes no sense.
Why can't we have in parentheses how many fucking energy it takes? I hate counting it up on the cards. It looks so bad.
It looks super bad.
It's just terrible.
Yeah, it's horrific.
Like the Architect of the Untamed or whatever, I'd be like, I might have enough energy. I don't know.
I still don't know how much energy that one costs, because it hasn't been played against me. So,
yeah, I mean, it's fine at 2. It's okay at 3. Anything over 3, it starts to get difficult.
It's a little funny.
Yeah.
I think 4/2 is pretty easy to see.
Yeah, the difference between 4 and 5 tends to get a little gray. And then anything over 5, you're just done.
Yeah. 100% anything over 5. 4 and 5, I could take or leave. and yeah. three or less is easy.
Yeah, I genuinely didn't know if this was 9 or 8. It, like, took a little while. I also grow increasingly less interested in what the card does as the energy cost goes up, because, like, it's either something that's going to happen to you after you've watched your opponent play a goofy fucking energy deck where they did nothing and then tried to beat you in one swoop, or it won't happen. Those are your two options. There's just, I'm not interested.
And in the first option, you're just going to die regardless of exactly what it does.
Right.
It's going to be powerful enough to kill you.
Yeah. Gain 100 energy and you win. Oh, great. I'm glad we printed these cards.
Fortunately, with this card, it's a 2-2. So when you pack your deck full of shocks, you can kill Saheeli Rai and break up the combo. You also just get to kill this card. So nice job.
Yeah.
5 mana. It's mythic. Is it this mythic? It feels like it's mythic.
It's mythic.
There's 5 mana mythic dies to shock. So I'm dead.
So why did you bring up this card, Mike?
Because it's a bulk mythic, and you can trade it in your local game store for 25 cents.
25, that's high.
Yeah.
What game store is giving are you in Michigan or something?
No, this is the great state of Rhode Island. 10 cents for any rare, 25 cents for any mythic.
I don't think I've ever heard Rhode Island quite described that way.
The great state?
Yeah.
The great state.
We were hot and cold a little while ago.
Has the red take another combat phase card ever seen major play ever?
You're talking like competitive play.
Yeah, I mean, like, because I print it every once in a while, and
I mean, there was the dragon that when it hit you could pay and get another turn, right? Yeah, another combat.
I don't know.
I'm trying to think of what else there is. There was
early version Lord
Relentless Assault. Like way back in the day?
Yeah, there's some angel that did it.
Early versions.
Oh, Aurelia.
Aurelia. She saw Fringe.
No, she. I did lose a match at a Pro Tour to her, but.
There you go.
No, it wasn't. Did I win that match? I lost game one of a match that I didn't think I could lose, and he just played Aurelia and killed me out of nowhere. I can't remember if I won the match, but it's been too long. But the Fury of the Hordes, I play in early versions of the Grizzlebrand Reanimator deck in Modern.
Oh, right.
Grizzlebrand, yeah.
I don't know if that really counts because all they're really doing is drawing 7 cards with it.
Right.
Yeah.
But they do deal you 7 damage. That was an important part, too. That was how they eventually killed you, so.
They print it. They make it so expensive because it would have to be because it's such a preposterously powerful effect. And like every other sort of like... chart topper for red, if your board is full, you die, and if it isn't, you don't.
And if your board is full, they're probably dead regardless. Very much a win more effect.
Yeah, and it says catch me if you can, and I don't like the art, and next.
The art is pretty terrible. As a note, it doesn't, if I'm reading this right, it doesn't limit the number of times you can do this. So if you have infinite amount of energy, you can just keep attacking over and over
again. That's what I want to do with my infinite energy.
Combat phases.
Well, you've got something better to do, like doming them for 50 or something? I don't know.
Whirler Virtuoso, that's a real card.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would much rather spend the money on 1/1s.
1/1s right. That fly.
Yes.
Yeah. Next card, Mike.
Aetherwind Basker.
I love this card.
It's a frog on a lily pad.
It's a lizard.
On a lily pad.
It's not a lily pad, it's a giant rock.
Just read the fucking card.
4/3 green for a 7/7 creature lizard has trample. Whenever Aetherwind Basker enters the battlefield or attacks, you get 1 energy for each creature you control. Pay 1 energy. Aetherwind Basker gets +1/+1 until end of turn. This is the greenest card.
It's very, very green. Except for the art. The art's not very green, but...
It's so green. Everything
it's
about it's
very, very
blue
green.
And brown.
What'd you say, Mike?
It's also very bad? Yes.
The art?
No, just like the card.
The art's lovely, actually.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it is essentially a green big thing, but it's mythic.
I wasn't paying attention to when you started talking about this card, and then I didn't believe you that it was an actual card, because in my head I assumed it was reasonably costed, and then I realized it's just the giant green mythic creature of the set.
Right.
So
right.
Yes. I freely dismissed it offhand.
It is much better than most Hydras, though, because chances are if you attack with it, they're at least going to take a pile of damage.
Yes. I just noticed that it is not a Hydra. That's unusual for the big green mythic.
That's why they were able to make it into a card that you could arguably play. in some deck.
But this is wouldn't. An EDH card.
I'd say it's a
definitely
it's
a casual card.
It's a rage-inducing limited card is what it is. Because like your opponent will be sitting there with something that kills like four CMC creatures, and then you just hit them with this and they explode because you do 900 damage to them.
There's a 4-mana unconditional removal spell in this set, so you're either gonna have them cast it and you can't answer it and you die, or you're gonna answer it for 4 mana and they're gonna be really mad.
Yep.
So one of you is gonna tilt.
If they get to 6 mana to cast it.
Seven.
7 mana, sorry.
Yeah.
That's not an easy card to run out limited.
Concealed, it'll be fine.
This is what I like to call a Sarah avatar. Something they seem to be doing a lot lately.
At least, well, this has trample, which is the one notable difference between that and that other effect, is that a lot, because you're right, a lot of those ones they print, just especially in sets like this, just bash against 1/1s forever, and there's no point. This at least overwhelms their little blocks.
25 cents.
Yeah, no, I mean, but I do hope I open it sometime, because I would play the hell out of this card in limited.
Oh, yeah.
Which brings us to Sam, senior editor.
I love this card.
He's got plans.
He does.
He's like moving pieces around.
That's right on me.
Thank you.
One and a white. It's a legendary creature, Dwarf Advisor. It's a 2/2. Whenever you cast an aura, equipment, or vehicle spell, draw a card. As this conflict grows, it gets harder to prevent the city from breaking down. How much longer can we keep this machinery balanced?
So this card provoked 2 buyouts.
And for Enchantress?
Wait. Hold on.
It's another Enchantress.
Was it Pure Steel Paladin?
That's one.
Shit. I can't think of the other one.
Retract. Yep. So my note to this one was, people want to play this card in Modern, but they shouldn't.
Everyone complains about how Modern is non-interactive and too
then
fast
they get excited
and springy
for shit like this.
Yeah, but they just whenever something becomes available where they can just cheese their opponent on turn 2, they're all in. So I don't really get it. You can't have both. You can either jund people or you can try to dead them. And if you're going to be the person who wants to dead them, you need to embrace it. See, I warmly embrace it. I just want to dead everyone and have 40 minutes between all my rounds to read a book.
It is mad funny how that consistently happens. And then, you know, somebody prints like a 2-mana 3/4 with like an upside. People are like, ugh. It's not as good as Tarmogoyf or whatever, you know, like there's no excitement for the decks that people imagine that they want to be playing against, like fair magic with like, you know, a spell here and a creature there. And yeah, it is very interesting.
But the 2-mana 3/4 issue being worse than Goyf is really a problem of the fetch dual mana base. The reality is, no matter like what color restrictions you put on a creature, unless it has a huge one, multiple different colors or 2 of the same color, as long as the card is like colorless and some color, you can put it in basically any deck you want to in Modern.
Yeah.
And that bleed over means that every card has to be compared to the best at its mana cost and not just the best at its mana cost in its colors.
Right.
And that means that Tarmogoyf becomes ubiquitous when you just want to beat down with efficient rate creatures.
Right. It is interesting that they've never banned that card. I mean, I'm glad they don't because I think it's wonderful. But it's like they won't print more. Well, I suppose they have printed more. They won't print enough that it's cheap, but they also won't get rid of it. And it's an interesting thought process.
It's okay. It's time for Tassigar's time to shine.
Yeah. It's a card I like.
That would be awesome.
It doesn't matter. So it'll push.
I have so many of them. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I've got a pile of them, too.
Oh, that's
they
right.
They were cheap.
Oh my God, I didn't even think about Fatal Push in terms of Tarmogoyf. Oh, that's so funny that I brought that up. I wasn't even thinking about it.
Fatal Push plays incredibly well with Tassigar and doesn't kill it.
Yeah, and it goes really, I mean, it's just, it plays really well with Fetchlands. God, what a good card.
Yep, right?
I love that card.
Are you just realizing Fatal Push in Modern? Is this?
Yeah, I honestly, I'm so far away from Magic recently. Like, I've really not been playing a heck of a lot because I haven't been able to get down there. So I was just going over the thing today and I was looking at it being like, oh, that's a great limited card.
Well, it's
wait, it kills too. Everything.
Wait, it literally kills everything except Tassigar. Got it.
Well, Tassigar and the other one. Zombie Fish.
Zombie Fish. What's Zombie Fish?
Sure, Mag Angler.
Oh, yeah.
God. We're about to get
zombie fish.
Real hard.
The angled angler. Yeah, as soon as I saw Fatal Push, I was like, oh my god, this card's amazing.
Huh.
It's
pretty good.
Fetch, kill what, anything.
What an elegant answer. That's a beautiful card.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
It really is.
It's an instant.
Anyway, we'll get to it. We'll get to it.
This card makes me weep. This is amazing.
Now we are going to talk about, hands down, the best card in the set, not close. Baral, Chief of Compliance.
I would love to play this card at the Pro Tour.
One and a blue for a legendary creature, Human Wizard. It's a 1/3. Instant and sorcery spells you cast cost one less to cast. Whenever a spell or ability you control counters a spell, you may draw a card. If you do, discard a card. I love him.
Okay, so this is not the best card in the set.
It's hate for hate bears. It actually negates Thalia.
This card is not that good.
It's awesome, though.
I really love, I guess. I just want to play it in cube. I love this card.
Well, I just see people going nuts for it. When I was looking at the pre-sale prices, it was $10.
I'll bet.
That's seems unreal. Pretty extreme for a legendary creature.
I expected it to be $2 or $3, and it was $10.
Yeah, I would have expected it $3 to $4.
It's about $5 right now.
I don't get it.
On TCG Player.
Well, you know, it being legendary, it has the commander aspect. Mono blue commander, I guess.
Jace
Prince
Prodigy exists.
Yeah.
Oh, good point.
I don't know. I think this card is its second line of text is completely irrelevant, but the fact that it makes stuff cheaper is kind of cool.
I love it. I've loved it from moment one. Because of it being legendary, I didn't imagine it was going to see a lot of constructed play, but I just was like, this is the coolest cube. I love 2-mana 1/3s, especially 2-mana 1/3s that do shit. I was very happy with this from terms of cube. I'm a little sad. I thought you were sharing my excitement. Now I feel a little burned.
This is one of the weakest cube sets I've ever seen for my cube or powered.
Mm-hmm. Weakest cube sets? Come on, people.
Shut up, Ross.
I'm breaking things in my apartment.
I don't know. I don't have
to try to stay awake.
I'll be okay.
Well, you know what? Thing in the Ice will certainly be better in this standard format now that Reflector Mage is gone.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Did any of you read my article today?
Nope.
No? No.
I was at work. I'm sorry.
I don't have premium.
You can read it at work. I assume that's 80% of my readership.
I will read it tomorrow, Ross.
Well, you'll find a blue-red Dynavolt Tower deck with Baral, Thing in the Ice, and Bedlam Reveler, and Tormenting Voice, Anticipate, Take Inventory, and Sweet Burn Spells.
That sounds a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think it sounds a lot of fun, too, and I hope it's good. But I have yet to test that one extensively.
I like every card you named except Baral. But I think he's probably fine.
He's really good in the deck. And you also need a certain density of creatures so they don't just die a huge portion of the time.
Yeah.
You need to have enough creatures where you frequently draw more creatures than they draw removal spells. And so something sticks.
I just wonder if 1/3 is a relevant blocker in the upcoming format or if people are just going to go way over the top. I'm not sure yet. Well,
1/3 is not going to be a great blocker, I don't think. It does block Inventor's Apprentice, although Inventor's Apprentice got worse. It does not block the 3/2 Toolcraft Exemplar. It blocks the Raven Inspector just to prevent
Scrappy Scrounger. I think all the human decks just get a little too big for it. We'll see.
But if you can prevent their first attack and then use your removal spells to kill some of their bigger stuff, I think you can leverage it pretty effectively. True. But there are certainly going to be games where it is the body is not relevant.
All right. I'll take a look at the list because I obviously love playing blue-red piles.
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah.
Next.
We have Yahini, your girl, Undying Partisan.
That's 2 and a black for a legendary creature, Aetherborn Vampire. It's a 2/2, haste. Whenever a creature an opponent controls dies, put a +1/+1 counter on Yeheni, Undying Partisan, sacrifice another creature. Yeheni gains indestructible until end of term. The time for, that looks like whiskey, but I think it says subtlety, is over, darling.
Go with whiskey.
Yeah, the time for whiskey is over, darling, which would also work.
That's great.
Excuse me one moment. I think I have to drag my girlfriend to bed.
No, I'm dragging myself. I wish you could stop me.
The time for whiskey is over, Kat.
She heard one drag themselves.
She hurt her ankle today, and so she has been scooting on her butt backwards around the apartment.
So, I don't have crutches.
That's not my problem. Okay. Yeah, I can do that.
I just want to listen to this.
This is riveting radio.
We are real. We're bringing the hits.
I had this card at the pre-release.
I had it in the Two-Headed Giant pre-release.
I'll be right back.
My opponent cast the card Fumigate against me.
Yeah.
And I made it indestructible.
Yeah.
And then I attacked them with a 13-13.
Holy shit.
It was crazy and limited.
That's awesome.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it seems like a cool card.
I think this card's like just under the bar for constructed playable.
Fumigate probably wasn't a great play there.
No.
I'm gonna throw that out there. They just immediately got attacked by a 13-13 after.
I don't think they really knew what was going on because it's a pre-release.
I certainly believe that.
Yeah.
I did have the joy of casting the Act of Treason and then sacking the creature to Yeheni, so that's always good.
They also gained no life from my creatures because I sacked them all to Yeheni.
That is just another thing that is true about that situation.
Just
wow.
Dagger. I think it's a really cool card. I just don't think it's good enough.
I can't argue with that.
Ross, I actually saw that you played with this in one of your videos.
Yeah, I played a black-white tokeny kind of thing with this and Zulaport Cutthroat and yep. SRAM's Expertise, and it didn't really go too well.
You discarded it a lot, if I remember correctly.
Well, I kept drawing all three copies in the games where I drew it, and then zero copies in the games where I really wanted it, which
yeah.
was really awkward. I think this card has some potential somewhere. I really wouldn't be surprised either way if it shows up or doesn't show up in Constructed. Although there are a lot of cards printed like that these days. And it just depends on if the decks it goes in end up being good. I've been a little underwhelmed by SRAM's Expertise in my early testing, but it is important to have sacrifice outlets that don't cost any mana. Because a lot of the time you're benefiting off of those sacrifices, and there's some benefit you're gaining off of that resource conversion. And so having that resource conversion be at zero mana is really important because it lets you sort of transfer a bunch at a time and create these combo kills with something like Zulaport Cutthroat. So that is a very attractive part of the card. Also, it plays well with Fatal Push, and I think that'll be a good thing to do in Standard because the jump from 2 to 4 isn't as big of a deal in Modern as it is in Standard.
Yeah.
It's huge in Standard, especially because of Felidar Guardian.
Yep.
So having a card that can turn on Revolt often enough so that you have a really good one-mana removal spell is going to be important. I think once you turn this card into a 3-3 and a 4-4 consistently, that's a powerful creature Constructed. So
yes.
It's going to take a tight balance of ways to get value off the sacrifice ability versus ways to get value off of the growing ability to properly leverage the card. But if somebody can figure that out and that kind of deck is good, then this will certainly be a good piece in those kinds of decks.
I'm sure Sam Black will do his very best to break this card.
Yeah, already had an article on that.
Well, I need to start reading.
Yeah,
that's what
do.
It is.
It's all out there.
Kerry Zev, Skyship Raider. Second best flavor of the set, not close.
I absolutely love this card. She has a legendary monkey. That is so amazing.
Yeah, this card's great. Would you like to read it, Dan? Since
I will when I get to it. There it is. One
is
in a red
a monkey
for a...
and not a parrot with flying.
Because that was copyrighted by the movie Hook.
Apparently. One in a red for a 1/3 legendary creature, human pirate, which is awesome. She has first strike and menace. And whenever Kerry Zev Skyship Raider attacks, create a legendary 2/1 red monkey creature token named, was it Ravagan?
Yeah.
Can you read it? That's tapped and attacking. Exile that token at the end of combat. And they even printed, of course, the Ravagan token, which is also pretty awesome.
Cube card. Card's great.
It's a legendary monkey token. That's just so awesome.
It plays really well, too. Like, this card's just great. It's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been happy with this card recently.
Yeah.
I published a red-white humans deck, which I right now is my pick for default aggro deck, at least in the early days of the format. And
okay.
Essentially, Smuggler's Copter leaving the format really hurts the dwarf-based vehicles decks because Heart of Kirin and Aethersphere Harvester as the next most powerful, reasonably cheap equipment just really aren't above the bar in terms of aggressive power that Smuggler's Copter had.
Mm-hmm.
And Heart of Kirin could be, but being crew three is too prohibitive. And you really want to be using Planeswalker loyalty to turn Heart of Kirin on. But so you need to find an aggressive deck that that doesn't really want to use Smuggler's Copter. So you go back to humans and adding another really good two drop alongside Thalia's Lieutenant, I think is quite nice, especially because humans is a deck with so many anthem effects. A single anthem brings us to a 2/4, so it survives Radiant Flames.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Yeheni's Expertise. So the being easily a 4 toughness creature along with Incited Rabble lets you set up some boards that are insulated against sweepers like that.
Yeah, well put.
Awesome.
So while we're talking about the second best flavor of the set, Dan, what do you think the best flavor in the set is?
The best flavor of the set?
Yeah, I think there's one that is just not close, best flavor they've had in a while.
Not hit me with it.
Caught in the Brights.
Oh, yeah. Hold on.
The art, what it does, it's, oh my god, it's so perfect.
It's just a common. 2-1, enchantment aura. Enchanted creature can't attack or block. When a vehicle you control attacks, exile enchanted creature. So, yeah, he's caught in the headlights.
The picture is
one of their
so
weird looking gremlins caught in the headlights of a vehicle and is about to get squished.
Yep.
Yep. That's pretty awesome flavor.
It's really great.
While hunting Aether, a gremlin may ignore other stimuli, including threats to its own life.
Poor gremlin.
I hate the gremlins. I just hate the art for the gremlins. I really.
What about the terror of the fairgrounds? That stupid giant gremlin. That art was so bad.
Yeah. I don't like the styling of the gremlins. It just, for some reason, it just bugs me, but whatever.
So next card, let's talk about a card that would have been the best card in Magic in 2001.
Yep.
Rishkar Pima Renegade.
This would not have been the best card in Magic in 2001.
Best card, not close.
Nobody played creatures in 2001.
Fours.
Whoa, hold on, I'm trying to find it. Here we go, and here we go. 2 and a green for a 2/2 legendary creature elf druid. When Rishkar Pima Renegade enters the battlefield, put a +1/+1 counter on each of up to 2 target creatures. Each creature you control with a counter on it has tap, add a green to your mana pool.
I think this card's very good, but...
But?
I'm expecting this is going to be a very combo-y standard format, so cards like this may not shine.
It's 100% my take on this card. You stole it from me.
Well, there you go.
Wow. 2 great minds that think great together. How about that?
Yep.
Great minds think alike, but fools seldom differ.
Nice quote.
It's the complete quote.
So yeah, I think it's a really cool card. I really like it. What it's doing is powerful, but it may not get to shine.
Yeah, the decks it goes in are not good in this format, as I have found out.
Yeah, I do not think being fair is where you want to be right now.
Nope.
That could change when things rotate. You never know.
We'll see.
And it could change if the format shifts around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This guy doesn't really get you to attack through a 1/4.
It does with Winding Constrictor. Winding Constrictor and this guy, you have 2 4 power creatures.
I don't actually know what that card does.
It's the snake. Why don't we do that one next?
All right.
Sure.
It'll be educational.
So this is a constructed playable card. I missed some of the spoilers.
The Winding Constrictor is black green for a 2/3 creature snake. If one or more counters would be placed on an artifact or creature you control, that many of those counters +1 are placed on that permanent instead. If you would gain 1 or more counters, you may get that many of those counters +1 instead. So you can voluntarily give yourself an extra infect counter if you want.
Well, it's not voluntary. It's if you would get one. So.
Right. So if someone attacks you and you were to get, say, 2 infect, 2 poison counters, you can opt to get a 3rd if you'd really like to.
Is it a may? I don't think it's a may.
Yes. It's a must. Oh, my God. Yeah. How about that? That's hilarious.
Yeah, does that cost 2 mana?
It's black-green, yes.
Black-green.
2 mana, 2/3.
All right,
that's
back.
That's a lot of text. So, yeah, it's a 4/4 with...
The second ability is mainly for energy, so whenever you get energy, you get one extra.
Yes, of course.
Servant of the Conduit kind of stuff.
Is that the snake?
The Winding Constrictor, yes.
Yeah, that card is complex.
Huh. Well, it's hardened complex. Scales.
Yeah, it's hardened scales plus you get extra energy.
Oh, okay. Huh.
So you play that card, and then you play Pima, and then you have two Biggins, and then you tap one of them for mana on the next turn, so you have five total mana, and you play Verdor's Gearhulk, and then you have three really Biggins.
And then you die to a million one force.
Yep.
How do they get haste?
Saheeli gives them haste.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, it's fun for all the kids.
That's the only way they'll learn.
Hey, so we heard you hated Splinter Twin in Modern.
If you were to actually have this card out with actual hardened scales out, how many extra counters do you get to get?
Too many.
Neither is a replacement effect, right? They don't say instead, so that they would build on each other.
I think so, yeah.
That's how they're worded. Okay, hardened scales is a replacement effect, but I think it's only if they're both replacement effects that... No, even if they were both replacement effects, I think they would still accumulate, because... You replace the initial effect with adding an extra counter, and then that creates another event that can be replaced again.
Which you'll double.
Yeah. So if you have,
You're going to choose the order that they get applied.
Sure, but they're not. Neither doubles. Hardened scale still only increases by one. Are you talking about doubling season?
Oh, I was sorry. Yeah, but hardened scale still does. Oh yeah, so you're only just going to get two basically. Off.
Yeah. But I'm sure someone will try this in Modern, and I'm sure someone will top 8 an IQ with it, and then I'll feature it as a daily digest. It'll be great. I've already got that one in the back of my head. As soon as I see it come up, like green-black hardened skills in a Modern IQ top 8, I'm just snapping it off, and we're done for the day.
Well, there is a not great but annoying hardened scale deck that's floating around on Modo in Modern.
What? What is in this deck?
Hardened scales, the one that gets +1 counters... I can't remember everything that's in it.
So it's someone who built a standard deck 6 months ago and never added any cards to it.
No,
they just let it rotate into Modern.
Yeah, something like this. A few other cards. It's annoying, but it's not like good. Oh, you know what else? It's got Experiment 1. It's got what's the Innistrad, the 2/1 with Undying?
Oh,
Stranglroot.
Got Geist.
Yeah, it's got crap like that in it.
Okay.
It's all not right, good. It's just annoying.
Lightning Bolt.
Anyway, next card, McKenna.
Shram's Expertise.
Where are we? What happened here? Hold on.
We've only gone through like two cards since you've been gone.
I stepped away for a moment. Oh, wait, we already did Rishkar, Pima Renegade?
Yep.
Okay. Shram's Expertise, 2/2 white for a sorcery. Create 3/1/1 colorless servo artifact creature tokens. You may cast a card with converted mana cost 3 or less from your hand without paying its mana cost.
So my comment for this one was, casting free spells is always powerful.
Yes. I think that statement will hold true for all of these that follow, except the red one.
I have two issues with this card. Two ways in this, in way, well... One way in which another card disappointed me because of this card, and one way in which this card specifically disappointed me. Well, maybe you could blame
Reckless
it on the other card.
Reckless Bushwhacker.
Yes, Reckless Bushwhacker is the main one. That it came into my head, and I was like, oh, that is gas. We're just going to beat people out of nowhere on turn 4. It's going to be awesome.
I proxied the deck up.
And it costs 4.
And then, well, no, Reckless Bushwhacker costs 3. The issue is you don't get the trigger unless you paid the surge cost.
Yeah.
That's the text for Reckless Bushwhacker.
Bushwhacker.
So if you cast it for free, it's not... If you've played another spell this turn, it's if the surge cost was paid.
Oh, so, that's lame.
Yeah, it is really lame, and so I couldn't do that. And then the other thing is, the card that naturally you want to pair with this one is Collective Effort, because it's an anthem immediately, and you can use the servos to tap for whatever that ability, Escalate, which sounds really sweet. So you basically just get Collective Effort for free. But the other two modes on Collective Effort are just so bad. That you still not good. none of the good creatures in the format have 4 power, and destroying an enchantment that would be if the removal mode were good. The destroying an enchantment mode might be good, but still probably not. Because cards like Stasis Nair are usually pretty bad against a Shram's Expertise deck, so they're not going to be in their deck. But if it was like destroy an artifact and the removal mode was relevant, man, would that be nice?
Yeah,
you just get to do everything all the time. I mean, I'm a fan of doing everything all the time.
So yeah. While this card may not be insane right now, anytime something that lets you cast something for free, you always have to at least look at it.
Yeah, I mean, it's sweet with Nissa, but again, that has runs into the same issue that Rishkar has, where that is a powerful interaction, but those kinds of decks are probably not going to be good, because yep. 3 2/2s is worse than a million 1/4s.
Right. Oh, I love it.
In fact, any bounded number of 2/2s is worse than an unbounded number of 1/4s.
That's just math.
Yeah. Indeed.
So, Baral's Expertise.
3 and 2 blue for a sorcery. Return up to 3 target artifacts and or creatures to their owner's hands. You may cast a card with a converted mana cost 4 or less from your hand without paying its mana cost. This card seems very powerful.
So, for this one, my comment was, casting free spells is always powerful.
That's very insightful, unique commentary. I'm glad that you
just
like that.
Wait till we get to Yahini's experience.
are we all kind of on the same page that the red and the green ones are not very good?
Well, when you read them, I'll give my comments on.
Oh, okay, cool. So Yahini's expertise. Ross, did you have any comments about this card? Dan, anybody?
This is Baral's expertise, I thought we were talking.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
We're on Baral's, yeah.
Yeah. Again, this card might end up suffering if midrange decks aren't as good as they used to be, or midrange aggressive decks specifically. At worst, it's going to be a pretty powerful sideboard option if those decks are on the fringe. I cannot imagine what it would be like to have anybody curve reasonably well Unlimited and then cast this card.
It's unspeakable.
It is unreal. I got to do it
again. Oh, really? Well, I had it done to me in the two-headed giant, and the kid had 2 copies of these in his deck.
Oh my goodness!
That's the wrong side. It was of that horrifying equation to be on, Dan.
Yeah, I figured that part out on my own.
I cast this into the Quicksmith one, the one that like taps an artifact to draw a card on turn 5, and it's just like, all right, the game's over.
that's doing it. I like that. I'm going to cast my sweet rare, and I'm going to use that to cast this other rare for free.
Yeah, it felt good.
It's like you're not even playing the same game.
Yeah.
The fact that in almost any other format, this would be a one-sided board sweep. But in this format, there's so much garbage. It's not going to be that powerful, I think, in Limited. I'm very curious. It's got so much potential.
I also got to return the 3/2 that revolts for -3/-3. So I bounced 2 of their creatures, then bounced that and put it back into play and killed their other creature.
That sounds good.
That felt really good too. This card was sweet. That's about it though.
You know,
Yahini's expertise,
which is 2 and 2 black sorcery. All creatures get -3/-3 until end of turn. You may cast a card with converted mana cost 3 or less from your hand without paying its mana cost.
Casting free spells is always powerful.
This one I had in my sealed pool, and it was fun.
This is the card I'll be playing in Standard.
So let's say you have a creature in your hand with a converted mana cost 3 or less that has 3 toughness, and you cast Yahini's expertise. Do you get your creature?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You follow the order of how things are written.
Order on the card. That's sweet.
That's pretty bad.
Honestly, all it does is put, what the fuck is her name? Liliana or Cast Anticipate.
Right.
That's all it does.
Cast Anticipate's good. Cast Liliana's good. Path. Especially if they have a 4 toughness creature. Ruinous Path to kill a Planeswalker is really good.
It's just great.
Transgress the Mind to take their next threat.
Yep.
Is pretty cool. Just casting a creature and turning the corner. Yeah. A lot of good options with this one.
So I built blue-black. That's the deck I intend to play for Standard. It's been good against Copycat, and like for whatever reason, everyone
don't,
around
don't
here
call it Copycat.
Huh?
Don't call it Copycat.
What would you like me to call it?
Literally anything else.
Splinter Cat.
No. Everybody needs to get out of the habit of giving these cutesy names to decks, because if you try to, SCG is never going to do that. They're going to give it a normal name. Like Jeskai Saheeli or something of the sort, 4-color Saheeli, eventually everyone's going to call it that. This is just going to work, so you might as well just stop trying to make fetch happen and just give it a reasonable name, like a normal, bland pencil right. salesman
I'm sorry,
of a human being.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. So I think the deck is good against Copycat. And I think it's good against
I will white turn tokens. This car around. I will turn it right around, and no one will go to Disney World.
Okay, I just really like this card. I think it's one of the better fair things you can be doing.
I think it is good. I'm not sure if it's great, just because it's going to be a poor card in a certain percentage of matchups where the sweeper effect is not good.
I agree.
And the cost on sweepers as a very high delta with their efficacy, because the longer your opponent has to either kill you before you can cast it, establish a board full of creatures that don't die to it, or land a significant threat like a planeswalker that it's not going to sweep up, are all issues. Now, Yeheni's expertise, because the extra card can solve a lot of these issues and turn it more into a Wrath of God of sorts, makes it significantly more viable. But in my experience, these expertise cards, there's a good portion of the time that you just don't have the thing you need to follow it up with. Happened a lot in my video with SRAM's expertise, and I just cast it as a 4-mana make 3/1s a reasonable portion of the time. And you have to account for that low end of the card's effectiveness into your evaluation. Mm-hmm. So, well, I certainly think the card's good. I think it'll see some play. I'm not necessarily sold that it's better than a card like Radiant Flames, because it's often just going to come out of the sideboard, and you're going to want the sort of, in your sideboard, you want the card that is going to be best in its role.
Yeah.
Now, you're playing it blue-black, where you don't have access to Radiant Flames, and it's certainly going to be better than, I think, a card like, what's the 3-mana one that has Devoid and exiles
minus
them?
-2/-2, yeah.
Yeah, the Infest card, because, especially
Humans
things like...
always like, went one toughness over that card.
Exactly.
Always.
I think that the note about where this deck card is likely to be played also matters, because it's very likely to be played in blue-black, which means that you are considerably more likely to have something in your hand to do with it,
yeah.
I think is an important caveat. Like, if you're drawing cards, this card, I think, is more powerful. If this was in some sort of, you know, if it didn't have access to that, I think that becomes a really meaningful statement. Like, you know, you're probably not going to have anything
yeah.
to do with your free spell.
Just being able to anticipate off of it has been so good.
Yeah, that seems very powerful.
Yeah.
I've
been really happy with it. I really like blue-black as a deck right now, but the Pro Tour could change so much that just makes it completely invalid. So we'll see.
I also continue to like this sort of new universe of Wraths being somewhat situational or incredibly expensive. Like, I really like – I think 4-mana clear the board is – really oppressive to design in a lot of ways, whereas this sort of thing, you know, having to make the call as to whether or not this is a sideboard card or this is something you're putting in your main deck is very interesting, whereas Wraths are deeply uninteresting, even if they are incredibly effective. So I think this represents the kind of card I like, and I think it's
I'm a big fan of the move to conditional sweeper effects and having a bunch of different ranges of them. It's the same thing they've done with normal removal spells in the last 5 or 6 years. It creates a much more interesting dynamic deck building decisions where you're 1 week, these removal spells match up well against the threats people are playing. The next week, people react to your removal spells and play different threats, and you have to keep staying one step ahead of everyone. And then it incentivizes deck building on the other side rather than just play the threats that are good against whatever removal spells people are playing. You play a wide array of threats so that you can often catch them on the wrong side of the threat answer equation. So that thing has generally been quite good. They might have pushed it too far towards the threat end of the spectrum, making threats a little too powerful, as they've admitted recently. So we might see some more powerful answers come. But the general idea of moving away from cards like Wrath of God and Supreme Verdict and towards a split of Fumigate and Languish and Yeheni's expertise in Radiant Flames, Anger of the Gods, is really nice.
Yeah.
I do like Supreme Verdict in the fact that it did force you to play two colors, but I do see that 4-mana may be a little too much for unconditional sweepers.
I despised Supreme Verdict. I absolutely despised it.
Well, that was the only card I cast the entire format, so.
The number of just when you're playing a mono blue aggressive deck and you can't counter their Wrath of God, I cannot tell you
how guilty it is. That's what you get for playing a mono blue aggro.
Stop trying to make mono blue happen.
Well, I didn't, but someone else did, and it happened, and it happened a lot.
Oh, it was painful.
It was awful. That's why things like Supreme Verdict needed to happen.
I like them coming and going every once in a while. I don't think the days of always having it is good. I thought Languish was a really cool card.
I agree. Yep.
Yeah. Which leads me to the next card, Carrie Zev's.
I believe that's Rufio's expertise.
Rufio. There's two Hook references in this episode.
Oh, I missed one. Sorry.
I've never seen Hook, so.
What?
Ross.
How is that the movie you do that to? There are so many other movies that I've never seen that can garner a reaction like that.
And this is the one.
I don't think Hook is really high on the list.
Well, here's the thing. If you'd seen it, you'd understand why we made that noise. That's like if you were like, you know, I love Christmas movies. And Mike and I were like, oh, man, like Muppet's Christmas Carol. And you were like, I've never seen it.
Best movie ever.
I think I've seen that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, what the fuck?
It's been a while, though. I'm pretty sure I saw that as like a kid, but it's been at least 15, 20 years.
You should watch it 15 to 20 times a year, every year, since you're a kid.
To catch up.
It is the best Christmas Carol ever made.
Best Christmas movie ever made.
Best Christmas movie
ever made. I don't know about that, because there is Die Hard to consider.
Well, luckily we do know
It's much better than Die Hard.
It's much better than Die Hard.
I've also never seen Die Hard.
Which is...
I've never seen it either. That's why it was so easy for me to say that.
Yeah.
Wait, you haven't seen Die Hard?
No.
I despise action movies.
It's a pretty good one, though.
Yeah. That's like saying this card is good in EDH.
No. What it is? What it is that most of the movies you hate are bad takes on Die Hard. It's like a very formative action film.
Sure.
And I think it has a lot of redeeming qualities, not the least of which are Alan Rickman.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That is my primary motivation to see the movie.
Yeah, you should. It's a good one. It's not enormously actiony by action movie standards either. It's good. I mean, but I won't pressure you.
So how many movies are ahead on the list of movies that I want to see?
15 times watching Muppet's Christmas Carol.
Yes.
Really?
So please watch Muppet's Christmas Carol.
I've seen a Muppet's Christmas Carol,
and
but it's just been a while.
And next episode, we will recite the lines. Each of us will play a part. And that'll be the next set review.
And we'll just, and then we'll do all the songs at the end.
It's sitting home and getting warm by the fire. I am definitely the ghost of Christmas present. And I will fight anyone who tries to take that role from me.
Sure is good to be heckling again. Sure is good to be doing anything again.
I hated it.
This is getting out of hand.
Short. I loved it.
On second thought, Rufio's expertise.
You seem to be a little absent-minded spirit. I seem to be a large absent-minded spirit. So good.
I am reminded that have any of you seen Blackadder's Christmas?
No.
Oh man, it's great. And so they do a Christmas Christmas Carol with Blackadder, and so Blackadder was this great British comedy show that took place in different seasons, took place in different time periods, moving forward through time. And so the Christmas Carol does, and every ghost takes him to a different Blackadder time period, essentially. And the ghost of Christmas present is Hagrid. It's the dude who plays Hagrid. And it's fucking awesome. It's really old. He was super young. Robbie, whatever his face is. But, like, he comes on camera, and I hadn't seen it in years. And I was like, oh my fucking God, it's Hagrid. It's great.
Is it Harry?
One and two red. It's a sorcery. Gain control of target creature or vehicle. Untap it until end of turn. Until end of turn. Untap it. It gains haste until end of turn. You may cast a card with converted mana cost two or less from your hand without paying its mana cost.
So this one I put, bad cards casting free spells is mostly powerful.
Will threaten with a free card be good enough for standard Rosmarium?
No.
If you cast Atog off of it and take their artifact, maybe.
Got him.
Hey,
that's called there. A 2-for-1.
So
it's not really a 2-for-1. It's so a 1-for-1 with tempo.
So you're saying it's your traditional shitty good in the red black sacrifice deck, bad red card?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But I like the red black sacrifice decks. So.
I know.
Well, this card is perfect for stealing a creature and then just ignoring the second part of the text.
So bad.
That is awesome.
No, that's not true. You cast this, take their creature, alters reap, bam. Doesn't even work.
Oh my god. Yet. That's a 2-for-1.
It's a 2-for-2.
It's a 2-for-1. Well, it's,
no, it's a 2-for-2.
It's a 3. It's a 3-for-2.
Got a 3-for-2. That's oh, hey. Advantage. Does it even work? Do you get control of the creature before you cast?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Yeah. Okay. It's like it'd be even better if it didn't work.
Rishgar's expertise.
Yeah. 4 and 2 green sorcery. Draw cards equal to the greatest power among creatures you control. I appreciate that they didn't make this say target creature. You may cast a card with converted mana cost 5 or less from your hand without paying its mana cost.
So for this one, I said really bad cards casting 3 spells is still somehow not close to playable.
Oh, is that anybody?
What card is this?
This is Rishkar's expertise, the one where you the it's the green card where you draw cards equal to the
yeah I know what the card power. Is
yeah
yeah you cast 2 turns after you die to a 1,000,000 1-force.
Yeah, we've been talking a lot about how these mid-range green cards got invalidated by the way the format is shaping out, and this is, it could not be more emblematic of that. I think in certain formats this card can be very powerful.
Yeah, it's where you have to go over the top of people.
Yeah, especially if you cast Verder's Beer Hulk off the trigger and.
Or Thragtusk, draw 5, put another Thragtusk into play.
Oh, God, just stop mentioning Thragtusk.
Dark times. Yeah, that's it.
Did they reprint a Thragtusky card?
Yeah, the 5-mana 5-something in the last set that gains 5 life with Trample.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The something.
Arborback Stomper.
Arborback Stomper, yeah. Yeah.
Take
that, Stomper. Non-existent red decks. Solemn Recruit.
Oh yeah, there we go. Boy, that's weird. It gave me a row of commons and then moved back to rares.
Yeah, I didn't understand that either.
Good job, Mythic. Spoiler. Solemn Recruit, 1 and 2 white for a 2/2 creature dwarf warrior, double strike, revolt at the beginning of your end step. If a permanent you control left the battlefield this turn, put a +1/+1 counter on Solemn Recruit. This is the least interesting version of this card they've ever printed.
They do it every set.
It's the 2/2 double striker. Get in there.
No, only one of them has ever really been playable, right?
Crusader?
Yeah, it's just the one people couldn't interact with.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't shoot it. Yeah, Silver Blade saw like an hour and a half of play, I remember. And yep. That's it.
That's just it. Because it came on the heels of right. Mirror and Crusader, and yeah. We didn't quite understand exactly that it was the protection aspect on a reasonable body rather than the double strike itself.
Stop trying to make double strike happen. This is one of those cards that you will play against in limited sometime and be like, this game is broken and I hate it. And then at all other times you see it, it's the worst card ever.
Yeah, that's it. That's all there is for that card.
I can no longer sit in my workshop and ignore the events outside. My hammers strike for the people of Ghirapur.
Twice.
That's actually badass. I like that. That's good.
Aethertide Whale.
Yale. 4 and 2 big fat blues for a creature whale. It's a 6/4. It has flying somehow. When Aethertide Whale enters the battlefield, you get 6 energy. Wait for it. Pay 4 energy. Return Aethertide Whale to its owner's hand. Bam.
So, water whale is a possible finisher in control decks.
No.
Just kidding, Ross.
I mean, I will first pick this in limited incorrectly all the time. I love this card to death because it's a whale. Also, when was the last time I saw a 6/4 flyer? What a weird body.
It is a weird card.
It's so often
shows off energy. Ooh.
Yeah, it nets you energy, and it only costs 6 mana to cast.
So now your infinite mana can become infinite energy.
What?
It's basically Palancron.
Yeah, that does seem like what they were going for. What's Palancron? Is that a 6/4?
Or Great Whale, four, I guess, four. Would be a way better analogy because that's actually a water whale.
Water, this is a sky water whale, a water sky whale.
I'm confused now. It's ruined me.
It's a squatter whale.
Yeah. Midnight Entourage.
It's a 2/2 black for a 3/3 creature Aetherborn rogue. Other Aetherborn you control get +1/+1. When Midnight Entourage or another Aetherborn you control dies, you draw a card, lose one life.
Somehow worse than the actual show. Indomitable Creativity.
But that's just Entourage.
Yeah.
Oh.
At night.
Entourage after dark.
Yeah.
Oh my god. All right, here we go. X, red, sorcery. Draw X target artifacts and or creatures. No, destroy X target artifacts and or creatures. For each permanent destroyed this way, its controller reveals cards from the top of his or her library until an artifact or creature card is revealed and exiles that card. Those players put the exiled cards onto the battlefield, then shuffle their libraries.
I just wrote no, and I didn't remember what the card did.
Hey, 4-mana unconditional removal for red where they then get a thing back. Sounds good.
I think you're supposed to target yourself.
Shh.
For a triple red deck. I don't know. This card's so fucking terrible.
Ross, feelings?
I have none.
There you go.
This card has existed before and
will exist again.
For me, it might as well not exist.
Dan, feelings? Indomitable Creativity?
Nope.
No, right?
It just got a bunch of no's. Perfect.
I don't even have EDH fields on this one.
That is a hard nope. Yeah, moving on to the next one.
Future $30 mythic.
How did I miss it?
Yeah.
Can we talk about the phrase EDH fields? Again, what does that even mean? It's like a Viagra-induced erection.
Well, the next card I wrote is EDH Fluff, which is Heroic Intervention.
I love this card, but it's one of those all-time great green combat tricks that will see no play anywhere but in a bad deck that I play in Limited.
This is the 2-mana protect all your stuff?
Yeah, the 2-mana, like, absolutely protect everything card.
Hexproof Indestructible, is that it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless they're languishing you, but...
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't do can't be sacrificed either, but that's not really something that happens in this set.
It's not... The creatures are removed from the battlefield as a state-based action when they have zero or less toughness. So
I was saying that I was surprised about it not also preventing sacrifice, because that's another thing that bad players hate having happen to their creatures.
Yeah.
What if I played 4 Heroic Interventions? And I also bought Snapcasters so that I can recast Heroic Interventions. You're like, I think you're missing the point of Magic. But it'll happen.
People, they don't like their stuff being countered and killed or whatever. They want it to stay on the battlefield. But if there was ever a format where just every card always stayed on the battlefield and it was all about combat, the best player would win 98% of the time.
Yes, that's correct.
They would hate it.
Since that format doesn't exist to prove that to them, the only thing keeping them from winning every game are all those unfair cards that destroy creatures and counter spells.
Yeah.
Yep.
So annoying. If only my creature had stayed on the battlefield and you didn't have anything in your hand, I would have won.
If only you'd taken 20 damage without playing any spells.
Yeah.
Like you were supposed to.
That's how I drew it up, and everything was going okay for a few turns, and then I just got so
Ross,
lucky.
Were you never that player? Did you just skip that phase? Had you?
Oh, I was definitely that player for like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I was just wondering, because I definitely, I still sort of am.
Well, I was never the player that got annoyed when my opponents killed my stuff, but I was certainly the player that overrated my own abilities and like was in the bottom of the Levine Trench.
Right.
Maybe a step above pure scum, but
you said Levine Trench, and
yes.
I thought Leviathan or Levitate Trench, and I thought about all the different ways to make Levitate happen. And I just drifted off to Phantasmal Bear Land.
Oh, I forgot about that deck.
Don't you mean Phantasmal Dragon Land?
It was so the best deck.
I would just build, whenever I'd win a box tournament, for the next event they'd play, I'd build a deck out of the box. And for one event, I built a deck that consisted of Phantasmal Bears and Levitation. And I convinced a few people that I thought it was the best deck in Standard.
Didn't you also have Lord of Illusion or whatever that card was?
I think so, but
yeah.
Win
a box with the deck?
Not sure if I was kidding.
I think
did you end
well.
Up winning?
I believe I had a positive record because it was an FNM.
But really, what can they do? It's a 2/2, all right? And then it's a 3/3, and then it flies.
Yeah, I don't think they understood that it flew.
You don't have to target it because of Levitation, so it, you know.
They can't kill it if they're dead.
Right, that's the idea.
That's my strategy.
It's like that's often my strategy, too.
Yeah.
Whenever I'm playing like a combo deck or something of that nature, or any sort of linear deck, everyone always asks me, well, how do you beat this card? How do you beat Rest in Peace with your Graveyard deck or Shatterstorm with your Artifact deck? Yeah. Well, I'm going to kill them. And then it doesn't really matter that they have Shatterstorm.
Aether Geode Miner?
Can somebody explain how this card is a rare? I fucking hate it so much.
What, Aether Geode Miner?
Yes.
What do you want it to be?
I don't want it to be.
That's it. You don't want it to be.
It's too complicated to be an uncommon, and it's not splashy enough to be a mythic. I think this card is perfectly situated at rare.
I just hate it.
I thought this was like one of the most interesting cards in the
set.
It
is. Yeah. It is. I can't get over the dopey miner, like, waving salutations. Another,
that is hilarious.
Another 2-mana 3/1.
Hi-ho, like, it's off to work he goes.
Yeah.
But what on earth does that picture and name have to do with this card?
I have no idea.
And I think what bothers me is that if it just had a different picture and different name, I don't think I would have, these feelings would have happened, but it like so bothers me from like a design, like design's not quite the word I'm looking for, design lore intersection, and I just hate it.
So what is the flavor? The miner like hits a rock and it opens up like a portal to the Aether, and then they like appear somewhere else and you're just like, oh shit.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
I don't. They hit ether geodes. That's what they're talking about. Anyway,
it makes no sense.
So the folks at home, it's a 1/1 for a 3/1 creature dwarf scout. Whenever ether geode miner attacks, you get 2 energy. That's pretty good. Pay 2 energy, exile ether geode miner, then return it to the battlefield under its owner's control. Flavor text is, gremlins in the wild feed on nodules of pure ether, which are also prized by miners. This card makes no fucking sense.
That just makes me more confused.
Really doesn't.
Flavor text doesn't help at all.
No, it's stupid.
The whole card is very confusing and, nonsensical.
It's like you get to attack with it, and then if they block you, because it's a 3/1 and it dies to everything, you can exile it and keep your card.
Well, I suppose it has a home in the Norn the Wary deck.
Hey, that, there you go.
That is true.
That's terrible.
It is.
It allows you to play your own board sweepers and not kill your own scout, provided it attacked and then didn't die, which means there would be no purpose.
It just blinks immediately, right? So it still dies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, it actually serves no purpose.
It's meant to turn on revolt.
Yeah, I know, but I hate it.
Aggressive dwarf creature brings together energy and revolt, blends two mechanics, seems fine. I don't know. It's a lot simpler if you just ignore the flavor text and the art.
Well, I can't.
Yeah, the creative is a fail.
You can do that. That's the problem. You can
dwarf creature A is a colorless white 3/1. Sorry, rare white dwarf creature A. Because I'm sure there's another one.
Right.
Sram is a rare white dwarf creature as well. So
that's a legendary rare.
Yeah, legendary. Very rare white dwarf creature A.
Dwarf B's expertise.
I hate it.
So, good luck with that card, listeners at home.
Enjoy Aether Geode Miner, which is also a terrible name.
Now we have a card that people are going nuts over. Whir of Invention.
Oh, yeah.
Who's going nuts over this card?
Russ, you got to look at the people on the internet. People don't just send you terrible deck lists because you're a writer for Star City.
That has to happen. Please tell me it happens. What's the
point?
That's
so weird.
Oh, man.
No one likes me.
Okay, oh, Ross, hold on.
I have been taking some terrible deck lists.
Hold on.
All I know is I have a 7/11 that's going to turn into a 10/11 and attack on turn 3.
Yeah. Nicholas, any person, Court of Calling for Artifacts, except slightly worse, because you could Convoke to play the color cost 2. Oh well, still neat. Going to need more toolbox pieces than exist in Standard right now to use it properly, but there's potential there. Also might try it in Modern Tesserator. Or Tron, actually. I run a very artifact-heavy U-Tron list.
Think, oh yeah, this card's completely busted in Tron.
Instant Speed O-Stone is moderately cute. 12 likes.
Yeah, just need 11 mana.
Yeah.
Lantern Control just got 4 more Ensnaring Bridges. This card is insane for the color flexible artifact deck, and I am sure it will receive star accommodations in the mana base, such as Dark Slick Shores, to shore this up consistently by turn 3. Fopter Gifts also looks
splash a triple blue card in our green-black deck.
Fopter
Gifts. The old Reinvention Abrupt Decay deck.
Classic. Looks better.
Here was my review.
Has nobody mentioned Affinity yet with this card? In the Mythic spoiler comment?
Dan, hold on. Let me do my review. If you do not realize that Reshape exists, you can go get a Lotus Bloom in Modern for blue, 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 but I'm not sure why you'd want to.
I mean, you might want 9 Lotus Blooms. I can see.
Did you put that in the comments on Mythic spoiler, Mike? Because if you didn't, you have to.
Mangetsu, any person.
It would get a bunch of down the votes.
I could see wanting 9 Lotus Blooms in decks that play Lotus Bloom. But not the good ones. And not the good decks that play Lotus Bloom. The bad decks
that
play Lotus
Bloom. I saw a bunch of people like, oh, this card's insane and ad nauseum. I'm like,
ad nauseum?
I don't think that's...
What?
Oh, man. This is... Boy.
What?
Boy, oh boy.
So you can go get a Lotus Petal in Legacy.
So it's just a slightly more expensive reshape with Improvise instead of a sack and artifact. Well, that's underweight. Instant. This thing is an instant. All caps. Oh, dear God. ...
Yeah, because
5 dots.
When I'm looking for a new card for an Eternal format, I always want a worse version of a card that already exists.
Yeah,
that's what I always
expensive.
Look for first.
You know, which toolbox has more options? The toolbox of creatures or the toolbox of artifacts?
Creatures.
Let's compare. One of those toolboxes is really big, and one of them is a lot less big.
Wait, so,
this card is broken in Modern eggs.
Well, that's the deck that might want it.
Are we about to start talking about Artificer's Intuition again?
The darkness. The darkness is here.
Did you see Sam Pardee's video on it?
No.
Oh, man.
Was he playing Greg Hatch's deck?
Yeah.
The only person that can possibly play that deck is Greg Hatch.
Yes.
I'm convinced. And Greg Hatch has much, much more important things to do with his level of intelligence than play Artificer's Intuition. But
the value.
That deck, I watched that deck. I still don't know what the deck does. And he explained all of it. But he does. And he just plays through it. And because he had been building that deck for 2 years. That's how... Let's just move on.
Are you going to be okay?
Too worked up?
Release them gremlins.
This card is nice, and we'll see a lot of play.
Hold on. I'm coming back. All right. Something about gremlins. Release the gremlins. XX red. Sorcery. Destroy X target artifacts. Create X22 red gremlin creature tokens. Seems somewhat less expiring since it's not up to.
So you can't just get a bunch of gremlins and destroy one artifact?
Yeah.
Yeah, that could be an issue. But the thing is, most of the time, this card's going to be Manic Vandal, which doesn't sound exciting.
I just saw that. No, Manic Vandal's the shit, man. I love Manic Vandal.
But Manic Vandal is going to be should be quite good in this format.
Yep.
And there are going to be plenty of times when you cast it for 5 mana and kill 2 things. And
it's so good.
Yeah, that's filthy.
Yeah,
I doubt you're ever going to cast it for X3 or more, but just having just those two modes is enough to sell me on this card. It's in most of my sideboards that can cast it.
Yeah, now that I realized it's Manic Vandal, this card is amazing. Just so we're clear. I think this is great.
Oh, it's very easy to miss that the card is just Manic Vandal with upside.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, not quite Manic Vandal with upside, because you can't blink it with Felidar Guardian. So
Oh, true.
Or copy it with Saheeli.
1-4 is maybe relevant in this upcoming standard. That's what we're trying to get everyone to know.
Yeah.
Just in case you were wondering.
Yes.
Have you heard it?
Yeah. Our next card, Aid from Simon Cowell.
There you go. 3 and 2 green for an enchantment. Revolt. At the beginning of your end step, if a permanent you controlled left the battlefield this turn, reveal the top card of your library. If it's a permanent card, you may put it onto the battlefield. Otherwise, you may put it onto the bottom of your library.
Next.
Rubbish.
It does look like rubbish. Although it does appear to have a bunch of elephants on it, the picture-wise, and that's... I don't understand what this card is supposed to be, but that's okay.
Dopey green enchantment with a ton of text that adds up to nothing.
Yep. Here we go.
Call for Unity.
What?
Next.
Call for Unity?
Oh.
I don't know.
Dan, do you want to do these?
What? Which one?
We're on Mythic Spoiler. It's Call for Unity. I don't want you falling asleep over there.
I'm still awake. No, I'm listening. I'm here. I'm on the card image gallery, not a Mythic Spoiler.
Oh, okay.
Listener Dan from Springfield.
Finally, ho, neighbor, you know? Call for Unity. 3 white for an enchanted element. Revolt the Dunies. At the beginning of your end step, if a permanent you control left the battlefield this turn, put a unity counter on Call for Unity. Creatures you control get +1/+1 for each unity counter on Call for Unity.
It's like he's wearing nothing at all.
That card is terrible.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Worst.
Why are we talking about this card?
It doesn't even get it per creature that left the battle. Oh, it's awful.
Well, which brings us to our next card, Will Smith Spy.
This card is not awful.
Well, in limited.
Oh, that's all I was thinking about. Never mind.
All right, someone read it.
3 and a blue for a 2/3 creature human artificer. When Quicksmith Spy enters the battlefield, target artifact you control gains tap, draw a card for as long as you control Quicksmith Spy.
Card's good and limited. Next.
So it sort of has soul bond with an artifact.
It's super good on limited.
It's very good. Glint Sleeve Siphoneer.
Dude, I love how many rare slots they now dedicate to, like, the black aggro cards.
Yeah. It's Bob. We swear, this time is definitely Bob.
This one's probably the closest they've come.
I've actually put this in the decks. When it enters the battlefield or attacks, you get an energy at the beginning of your upkeep. You may pay double energy. If you do, draw a card and lose one life.
Yeah, it's just Bob but hard.
Yeah.
It's cool with the Winding Constrictor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's because I want Bob that needs other things to activate it.
Doesn't need that much help. There are a lot of cards that produce energy. You have a Tomb of the Aether Hub.
I just want Constrictor, Bob.
Servant of the Conduit. Well, you can't have Dark Confidant. Do you remember what happened with Dark Confidant standard?
I wasn't playing. Bring it back.
There were 4 different black-white aggro decks, and they just all had Dark Confidant GJ, and you just picked which other 57 cards you wanted to put it next to them.
I think the problem was GJ.
There's an argument.
It was Dark Confidant.
He was just hanging out.
What did he just do?
He drew you closer to GJ.
I actually tried to build the worst deck I possibly could with GTA in it and still win an FNM. And I built a black-white deck. It was virtually mono-white, splashing for Bob. Had Bob and GTA and had 8 Suntail Hawks because there was a Spirit one in Kamigawa block and then regular Suntail Hawk and a bunch of really crappy white creatures, and it was just still good enough.
Yeah, GTA. Hell of a magic card.
But Dark Confidant was a big part of that.
It's a good card.
I have gotten annoyed with how often they're reprinting almost the same card, but terrible. It's like, ooh, remember how good Bob was? Now you can have this. And it's like, fuck you.
Member berries.
They're just, they're rebooting it. That's what they're doing. They're rebooting cards that we once loved.
They're retconning them. And they're all just, they're like, oh, this reminds me of a card that was really awesome, but this one sucks.
Yeah, I do agree. It's really annoying.
Seeker, and there's been a bunch of them lately.
You know, if you want to do that on occasion, that's fine. I think that's a reasonable thing to do. But that if you're doing it too often overall, that's a problem. And if you're doing it too often for a given card, yeah.
Yeah.
For Dark Confidant specifically, they've made a million of them.
Yep.
and none of them have been played.
Like, keep it in a set that's at least reminiscent of the set it was originally printed in. Like, the Almost Bob being, like, Return to Ravnica or something. It's like, okay, yeah, whatever, but I don't know. It's just annoying.
I agree.
Well, if there's anything to turn this podcast around, it's a little Pearl Jam region.
I suppose I'm reading it. 4 red for a 4/4 creature dragon with flying, as most dragons have. It has improvise, and for 1 red, it gets +2/+0 until end of turn.
While better than anything Pearl Jam ever wrote, it is still unplayable.
I was impressed by other improvise cards, like Metallic Rebuke, Herald of Anguish. So I started putting this into some decks, just to see how good all the other improvised cards were. And this one kept dying to Chandra and Grasp of Darkness, which was annoying.
Mm.
Just like Pearl Jam.
Yeah. That's who did it.
Oh,
it's funny that they printed essentially the same card in Herald of Anguish and this card, except Herald of Anguish has a bunch of meaningful shit going on, and this doesn't, and so this card is really bad. Like, at first glance, you're like, oh yeah, they kind of did one for red and black in the same, and this card is terrible. Like, there's just no point to it. Gonna be a pretty silly limited card, though.
Yep.
Fine threat if your opponent doesn't have the removal spells to kill it.
Yeah, or a blocker.
Nobody really has the flying blockers to deal with this, except, you know, Archangel have some, but...
Right. And a bunch of Thopters.
That's true, too.
Yeah, it just seems terrible.
You can get the card through with Key to the City, though. And if you're improvising, Key to the City is also sweet. If you've done that yet. You tap your Key to the City to make a mana with improvise, and you draw a card.
Oh, that's pretty fucking sweet. Cool.
Yeah.
That sounds much better with Herald of Anguish, though, if I had to be honest.
Yeah. So, I'll be right back, guys.
All right. I just realized we have a million more cards to get through. So I'm going to skip the bulk ones for now.
Well, I mean, we're not going to go through every common and uncommon, right?
No, but there's still a lot of rares left.
No, there's only like 6.
No, there's like 20.
Rares?
Yeah, like 25. There's like 30 left.
Have we been going through on order on Mythic Spoiler? Because
yes.
The one I'm looking at, there's only like 5 more left, but maybe we haven't talked about all the ones.
You get down to like multicolored and artifacts.
Oh, yeah, I didn't scroll down to those yet.
So,
yeah, let's talk about interesting ones.
Greenbelt Rampager, the elephant in the room, because it's an elephant.
Yep.
I built a deck with this card, and it had Life Crafters Bestiary and Paradox Engine and a bunch of mana creatures, and you try to, like, combo off. It wasn't good. It was fun.
Yeah, I'm not feeling this card.
If there are some sort of energy-based aggressive decks, this is probably a fine card, just because it gives you something to do on turn one to get extra energy, which is generally fine, and you can get extra energy at various points in the game as you need it and use excess mana. And frequently it'll just be a way for you to double spell on turns 3 and 4. That's also good. You can also just cast it turn one and then turn two again, turn two a second time, and just make it a 3-mana 3/4. That you use your first 2 turns to get into play. And that's not a bad start for an aggressive deck. But again, decks like that I just haven't been very impressed with.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's something cool you can do with the Bestiary, but that like maybe you build that style of deck and just make it better, but I'm off it.
Yeah, I'm not feeling it. Consulate Crackdown, Cyborg card. Disallow, that's a real card.
Yeah, this card was being horrifically overrated when it was initially spoiled, and then the bannings happened, and so without Emrakul and without like, the Delirium decks being big threats, the upside of this cancel being able to like, counter Planeswalker activations and random stuff like that versus the upside of exiling their spell so they can't get it back with the 2-mana card that they play, Grapple. Or Liliana makes this just the cancel that control decks play. And the fact that Torrential Gearhulk is really good and making control decks good means that it'll see a lot of play and that sort of disappoints me because it'll have all these people that saw Stifle and were like, oh, Stifle's a very good card because it sees play in Legacy, so this card is great too. And they, those people who are wrong aren't going to learn their lesson, and I'm disappointed at that fact.
I like that statement. I agree with it wholeheartedly.
Yeah. Stifle was not a good card in Standard. And few people remember this because it was 15 years ago. But
played at all?
No. It was super hyped, and it obviously changed Legacy.
I think I remember someone, like, stifling my fetch land in a PTQ and me just being like, okay. Nice card. That's all I remember it doing. Because it was like all Mirari's Wake at the time.
Mirari's Wake and then later Affinity and Blue-Green Madness. And okay. Yeah, Stifle just not a very good card.
Yeah.
It happens to match up well against fetch lands. And fetch lands are so good and so ubiquitous in one format that Stifle is legal in. And so it sees play in that format for that very specific reason.
Yeah.
But here, I mean, the planes, countering a Planeswalker activation,
a good card. Yeah.
Yeah, is kind of cool. That'll certainly do something. It's enough upside on just cancel for Standard that it's fine to have that upside. I don't think that would have been worth it over Void Shatter, where people still needing to deal with Emrakul. But once that changed, this just becomes the better cancel. But that's all it is. It's the better cancel.
When people said this card was good against Emrakul, it's like, but you still lose to the other half of whatever you're not countering or stifling.
Well, if you're casting this card to deal with Emrakul, have you read Summary Dismissal?
That
card exists. They're playing a 7-mana spell. You can afford to counter it with a 4-mana spell instead of a 3-mana one.
Yes.
Yeah.
They both get just some people.
That's where we are in life. Good card. This will see Standard play.
Yep. We'll see plenty of Standard play.
Yep.
Be prepared to play around the other modes of it.
Yes.
With your having your
Liliana Ultimate get disallowed will feel pretty bad.
Yes. Yes, it will.
Secret Salvage, I didn't read. Pia's Revolution, I also didn't read.
Pia's Revolution is like the thing that makes them lightning bolt themselves, unless they give you back your artifact.
I don't know. Sometimes cards just look so wonky, I just don't bother.
Two R enchantment whenever an artifact goes to your is put into your graveyard from the battlefield. Return to your hand unless an opponent
Punisher mechanic
takes three or whatever.
Yeah.
This is one that is more abusable.
I will leave that one to you then. I will let you do all the work on PS Revolution.
It has a chance of being an okay sideboard card in a very specific deck.
Okay.
There's like a 5% chance it sees constructed play, which is more than most cards. So.
That's true.
Good job.
Greenwheel Liberator. This card is not Tarmogoyf or Modern playable.
Correct.
There we go. It is a 2-mana 2/1 with Revolt that makes it a 4/3. I think that's right.
Yep.
Yeah. That's it. Just so the people at home know where can keep up.
There's no way to cast this as a 4/3 on turn 2 in Standard. Oh, there is in Standard. You just play turn 1 Renegade map.
Yeah, but then you're playing turn 1 Renegade map.
Oh, you're underestimating Renegade map.
In your beatdown deck? I'm not feeling it.
I mean, if we're trying to revolt, there probably aren't enough revolt creatures, but
yeah, I don't think so.
Oh, I've been casting some Renegade maps. Improvise with something.
True. Yeah. Will Smith Rebel is a bolt card. Fatal Push. Hey, we're at Fatal Push.
This card will redefine Modern and be okay in Standard.
So I went on a little rant about this card in our little testing group on Facebook, where they all claim that this is the card that makes Grixis tier 1, and I'm of the opinion that if people want to cut Lightning Bolt for Fatal Push, why are we playing Grixis?
Yeah, that is the point. It's the card that makes Sultai viable.
Yes, that was my point, and I had a lot of good players arguing with me about that.
Yeah, you're right. At the point you're cutting Lightning Bolt, there's really no point to be read. The other point to be read was that you had like the appropriate Scars Land, but now you have all of them, so that's also not a consideration.
I the card was fine in Grixis, but I think Modern's in a place where it's going to become a lot more big mana decks. Whether that actually happens, we'll see, but I expect a lot of Bant Eldrazi and crap like that. And the fact that a lot of people want to cut Terminate for Fatal Push just makes you so much worse against those decks.
Yeah. I mean, they're all good cards in Grixis. I assume if you're building your Grixis deck, you want access to all of them. It's just a question of what numbers. Like, I can see so 4 Bolt, 2 Fatal Push, 2 Terminate if you want 8 total exactly discards. Those are the most intuitive numbers to me. One Culligan's Command or something if you want that. And,
oh, I still have 3 just for the loops.
Well, it depends how aggressive you are.
Yeah.
I have been less a fan of Culligan's Command than most, but
okay.
Are you playing any red threats in that deck? Like you aren't,
no,
right? Yeah. You're mainly just Snapcaster and Kassiger, Gurmagankler kind of things. So those go into Assault One. Do they mean to go into Assault Shell? You can be Esper.
Very happy with Sultai. Right now,
what,
I have.
What green cards are you playing?
So Decay? What I have is it's like a port of Grixis Control, except you're losing Lightning Bolt. So your removal is like 4 Fatal Push, 1 Murderous Cut, 2 Abrupt Decay, and then your creature base is 3 Tasker, 4 Snapcaster, 4 Tarmogoyf. And then instead of Ancestral Visions, you play the discard, and then sideboard I had Ancestral Visions.
Yeah, that sounds perfect.
Yeah. It's been really good so far.
Yeah, like those 11 creatures, like 6 discard spells, 7 or 8 removal spells.
Yeah.
4 Thought Scour.
Yep, exactly.
4 Serum Visions.
Yep, Snapcaster is just so fucking powerful in that
and
deck.
A couple counter spells. And.
Yep.
Yes, definitely some spell snares.
Yeah, 2 spell snares, I think a couple cryptics, and I think
cryptic,
I had 2.
Cryptic is ambitious.
Well, it started off as like an exact port of Grixis Control, and I've shaved down to 2.
4 Dark Slick Shores.
3.
4 Dark Slick Shores. Put 4, I would play 6 if I could.
Well, right now I own 3, so that.
How much are they, like $3?
Ross, every deck I play has to be 100% foil.
Oh my!
Every single deck.
The best thing about this show is Ross re-experiencing this pain every time, having not remembered.
Yeah,
I just finished my set of foil Japanese Tassigers.
And they're Japanese.
Oh, Japanese!
Can you be any more basic? so basic.
My Tarmogoyfs are English. How's that? But they are Future Sight foils.
Oh my god.
Future Sight is better than Modern Masters, but
yeah, by
foil cards are
by a lot.
Any amount of foiling makes it worse than any foil card is worse than any non-foil version of the card. I'm not sure. I'm trying to come up with a card that has a really pretty version and then a really ugly white-bordered version and say I would take the white-bordered version of the card over a foil version
of the pretty
one. How about
have you seen a foil Lorwyn Thoughtseize?
Mm-hmm.
It's like the prettiest thing on the planet. You would play the Theros one over it is what you're saying?
Oh, easily.
Oh, vomits forever.
So wrong.
I would play a Theros version where someone took an eraser and whited out the border before I play the foil Lorwyn version. And that's one of the most heinous things I've ever seen people do to their own Magic cards.
I have whited out some of my cards. I love it.
You
I love white borders. I love them to death.
Like foils and white borders. Dude, what is wrong with you people?
The best thing, Ross, is the white borders I've done with the new frame. Because the cards didn't exist in white border before.
It was so weird.
It's so good. I love it.
These elements of Magic style used to be unanimous in the community. Everybody thought the same way. It was great. We had a nice hive mind going. Everybody understood what looked nice and what looked hideous. You had black border cards, old card face because the new one is hideous, and and foil cards were stupid. All of these things were agreed upon facts. And somewhere along the line, this community just got infested by some horrible group of people, and I want them to go back to where they came from.
I am just for the record on board with the black border as being much prettier.
I'll put this out there. I aesthetically think the white borders look better on some cards. They remind me of old Magic. I think a lot of people do it to troll people like you, and that's the difference.
Yeah.
This is not what Richard Garfield intended.
Ross,
and I will not stand for it.
Ross, if you ever want a cube with us, you're welcome. All of the cards are foil except for the proxied dual lands, which are white proxies.
Proxies are fun. Well, if your proxies are white border, then everyone foils their cube. It's not even like it's gauche and it's basic. It's complete. Ugh, it's the worst.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful. Foil unhinged lands, Ross.
Oh God, unhinged, the most basic of lands.
Oh, the most beautiful.
Unhinged are not the most basic lands are any version of Zendikar lands, old or new Zendikar lands.
Yeah,
correct. So basic. Bad. But unhinged are a very close second because they are 10 times as expensive and look just as shitty.
If you want to come play with my cube, Ross, I have all 8th, 9th, and 10th edition white border basics. So if you're interested.
They don't even match?
No. I picked the best pictures.
So are all your mountains the same?
No.
No.
Nope.
Why would I do that? There's so many beautiful mountains.
But you have to pick one. They have to match.
No, they don't.
And
they specifically can't match.
And you can't blend sets together, so you can't have 8th next to 9th.
You need
to keep the bloodline pure. haven't you ever seen Harry Potter? This is really important.
Oh, you are Slytherin, aren't you?
This is really important.
You're one of those people that when you're around the wrong kind of folk, you're like, no, I'm Ravenclaw, but you're not. Filthy mudbloods.
No, I mean it. You're filthy mudbloods.
Now let's talk about politics.
Are we done with the Magic cards? Do you have any more you want that you feel are important to talk about?
Our listeners demanded that we talk about politics.
We'll get to the politics. Let's wrap up the cards first.
Johnny Unyielding. Okay, trash.
It does look like trash.
You draw a bunch of cards with it. It's a fine 6-mana planeswalker. But it's a 6-mana planeswalker, so.
Ross, would you like to talk about Tezzeret the Schemer?
I think I'm trying to make this card work. And it's awkward because it does not apply pressure. It's really good with Heart of Kirin, which is nice. And I very much enjoy that you can tap out for it on turn 4, make an Aetherium Cell, and then have a fully powered Fatal Push up to stop Faladar Guardian. So there are aspects of the card I like, but it's a really difficult card to make work. Any deck with it is going to have a lot of moving pieces. You have all these cheap artifacts you need to enable improvise, and then which improvised cards you want, and the numbers of them are all very important to get a well-oiled machine.
It sounds like you're trying to drink a beer really fast. Get that out. I don't know why. Was your mic cutting out or something?
I had a hiccup coming up that I suppressed while in the middle of that rant.
This card seems like it is essentially a fixed in the new sense version of the old one, which is that it does a lot of the same things, but it does them much worse or much slower. Because the original Tezzeret is, of course, fast and furious, and this card is ponderous and
scheming.
Yeah.
It's right there in the name.
Cool card.
It's really cool, although I have a problem. So he's like the entrenched, mastermind leader on this planet, right? He's like running systems and stuff. Why the fuck is he wearing a dirty jumpsuit like he just jumped out of a skyship or some shit? He's like, he should be wearing like a suit or something because he's in charge and he's just dressed badly.
Style points.
No, it's not stylish. He looks like he was thrown onto the ground. He's very dirty.
What's the movie with the one-armed man?
The Fugitive.
He's playing both roles in The Fugitive. That's what he's doing.
But I like this card a lot.
It's really cool.
I like the original one so much.
Yeah.
Great
foil, Russ.
Next card.
Dark Intimations.
Serenity Now.
So this card is like the bulkiest of bulk cards you'll ever see. But Nicol Bolas hype will spike the shit out of this before
the Speaking of crappy retreads of old good cards.
Cruel Ultimatum.
We have not quite as Cruel Ultimatum.
Yeah. Mild Ultimatum.
We wouldn't want you to kind get discouraged. Ultimatum.
Yeah. So yeah, buy them at bulk. That's it. Oath of Ajani. This card's really bad. I don't get it.
Yeah, this is a card that I keep seeing in decks. And I'm
just, yeah, I don't.
You realize you can cast Servant of the Conduit into Gideon, right?
Yeah, neither of the halves really. No, it's no.
Yeah,
it's very weird. Like, am I going to make my one drop into a 4-2 and try to go, or a one drop into I guess it would be a 3-2 and then a 4-3. It's just not good.
The problem with the card is you never get both halves.
Yeah. Ever.
You never get value from both.
Yeah, that's really weird.
Yeah. Boo.
Both of Ajani's cards, it must be noted, have amazing art on them. Like, mind-blowingly good art.
That doesn't need to be noted.
Noted it.
But it didn't need to be noted.
Disagree.
You could have not noted it and we would have moved on with our lives.
To disagree.
It probably looks great in foil.
I suspect it is a beautiful foil.
I hate you. Never coming back on.
So, since green-white is historically a terrible color pair in Cube, I want to try this card out at 4 mana, the Ajani Planeswalker.
Oh. It could
be good.
Yeah, I think at 4 mana it could be quite a good card.
Yes. That's it. That's what I got from the card. Heart of Kiron. Someone should read this one. This one actually matters.
It's 2 mana legendary equipment. It's a 4/4 with flying and vigilance. Not equipment. You know what I meant. Vehicle. 4/4 flying vigilance. Crew 3. You can remove a loyalty counter from a planeswalker you control to also crew it.
Which seems great.
Yes, that's the ability that's relevant. This is a card that's going to go with various planeswalkers. Incidentally, it plays nicely with essentially all the 3-mana planeswalkers that start at 3 and have plus 1s, which is Nissa, Liliana, and Saheeli. Also plays very nicely with Tezzeret. I think once you have 2 different planeswalkers in your deck, so the 8 planeswalker cards, it becomes reasonable to crew this with some amount of consistency. I've had some issues with 8, but the card is obviously very powerful. It is good at pressuring those same planeswalkers.
Mm.
So you play Heart of Kiron, then if your opponent's on the play, they're going to think twice about playing their Saheeli or Liliana or Nissa. So that is also nice. You can get free value, and if you're unable to crew it the next turn or want to do something else, you're going to get some deter equity. That's the word, not defer.
The question is, will this card play well with cards like Scrap Heap's Grounder? I think that's the real question. Is this card good enough in an aggro deck? And I don't think it will be.
I agree. I don't think it will be.
Well, the crew is tough, I think, in that context, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's that point, probably that point too expensive.
Yeah.
To, like, really make it, because you're unlikely, you're just not getting full value for casting your creatures after it.
Yep. So I think this card will still retain a high price tag due to the rest of the mythics in the set being complete trash. So that was my financial review.
Is this a card that is probably a little bit too elegant to actually see a ton of play in, like, as the format shapes out? Like, because it doesn't really see that double duty in, like, an aggro deck, and you really need it in that mid-rangey planeswalker thing where it gets full value out of everything you're doing?
I think this is the type of card you learn a lot by just jamming games.
Mm.
Like, I don't know how to evaluate it. I really don't. Like, I need someone to beat me with it.
Right.
So, I really don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting that a lot of your 3 drops are probably going to be able to crew it, you know, a decent amount of the time, but that, you know, it's vigilant, just a funny ability until you get until you get yourself established. Like, a lot of it seems later. I don't know. It's a weird card. It's got power in strange vectors.
Yeah.
I think it's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is super cool. The ability to use a different type of resource to crew it is just, it's awesome design.
Yeah.
Next up, Aethersphere Harvester.
I fucking love this card.
Yeah, I think this card is, like, wonderful.
Three mana, artifact vehicle. It's a 3/5. It has flying. When Aethersphere Harvester enters the battlefield, you get 2 energy. Pay 1 energy. Aethersphere Harvester gains lifelink until end of turn. Crew 1.
Yeah.
That's pretty sweet.
I think this card will be good.
Yeah. It'll just be... It's another one of those mid-range cards, but if you're playing to beat aggressive decks, this is definitely a good way to do it.
Yes. Yeah. This is the defensive spectrum of Smuggler's Copter.
Yes.
Yeah. As Smuggler's Copter really wanted you to be attacking nonstop, this one can play defense and offense. I like this card a lot. It's also way less powerful than Smuggler's Copter. Just because they're vehicles, I'm comparing them. The Paul Walker Colossus. Paul was great. This card.
I love this card.
Yep.
It's so bad. I love it to death.
It's really bad.
Don't you understand? When I have 2 of them out on turn 5, they can make themselves into 6/6s.
Ba-bam.
Bam.
Great with Start Your Engines. Yep.
Is it even great? I think it's playable. Playable.
I think playable is too far. Planner Bridge. Pay 14 mana. Put a 5/5 into play in limited. Something. Gonti's Aether Heart. I don't remember what it does, but I put combos with Whirler Virtuoso for much fun.
It's a 6 mana legendary artifact. When it enters the battlefield or another artifact does under your control, you get 2 energy and you can pay some, I think 8 energy to and exile it to take an extra turn.
Okay. So, you put the token into play and get 2 energy. Yeah. Pay 3, do something. I guess I'm sure there's ways to go after that.
You need the age of experimentation or what? Age of innovation. Then you go crazy.
Okay.
Because sure. Then you pay a mana for 4 energy is the idea.
So oh, okay.
You just sort of get to auto extra turn. By the
there's
time
like an
it's
artifact
set up.
Too that you can.
Yeah.
Do. Yeah.
The potentially good thing to do with this is in a Metalwork Colossus deck.
Give me this.
You're playing this 6-mana thing, so you're presumably if you've curved into it with stuff, you can play Colossus for free, and you play 4 of the land, Sanctum of Ugin, and tutor up more Colossuses.
Oh.
So if you have 2 Sanctums, this gives you 2 energy, you play a Colossus, get 4 energy, get 2 more with the lands, go up to 8, and immediately end the game.
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I've worked on a couple of Colossus decks. They have underperformed, and I am off of them, but it's another deck that has a lot of moving parts and a lot of different pieces that you have to get right in order for it to work at maximum efficiency. And I wouldn't be surprised if someone finds it and this is a key part of it.
That deck scares me. Like, it's always, like, so close.
Teetering on the brink.
Yeah.
Yep.
Paradox actually, Engine? I'll let you finish. What'd you want to say?
The original version of the deck that I had was looking actually really nice, and then they banned Smuggler's Copter, but I had Copter in the deck, and losing Copter was actually a pretty big deal.
Yep.
Shocking. The card's incredibly good. I can see that.
Well, it might not seem as good in this, like, awkward mid-range deck, but I had Hope of Ghirapur and the Glint Nest Crane to crew it, and then Hope of Ghirapur was another way to sort of stop your opponent for a turn when you went off. You know, like, attack, sacrifice it, play all your giant guys so they couldn't counter them, and then pass a turn and they couldn't wrath them away.
My.
Huh. That's interesting.
I like it. Yeah. I like all these stupid... I mean, I just love fucking garbage artifact. Like,
oh yeah,
slam them together decks. I'm just a huge fan. There's actually...
You should move to Kaladesh. That's what they do there.
No, you wouldn't. It's basically Burning Man, Fitz. You would fucking hate it.
You're right. Oh my god, it really is. It's the Burning Man plane. Oh, everything is so much darker now. I wish we had thought of this earlier. On that sad note, I have to go to bed because I have to get up for work.
All right.
So it was a lot of fun, and I think we should do this more often. And good luck with the rest of the show.
Thank you.
Okay. Good night. Bye, all. I'm especially sad that I won't be able to hear Ross sing. That's what I woke up this morning for, but we got started late.
Ross is going to sing Pocket Full of Miracles.
Oh, my God. No, Even Flow. I expect.
Surround butterflies?
I won't even need the lyrics of that one.
Funny, yeah. You got to do the
yeah. Jeremy All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night. So we're almost at the end.
All right. Let's push through here.
Paradox Engine, the card that's going to revitalize elves.
Oh, God.
In what format?
I don't know. People keep saying that. I don't get it.
They already have Intruder Alarm.
Yeah. I don't. This is one of those cards I'll never understand and I'll never play. That's a $6 for some reason. Walking Ballista. Ross, can you enlighten me why this card is $7?
This card is actually just good.
It is?
Pretty sure. It's been I was skeptical of it. It's been overperforming. One, it's a permanent based way to insulate yourself against the Saheeli Guardian combo, as if we haven't mentioned that often enough tonight.
That's very true.
It is. There are various ways to put counters on it. Rishkar, Nissa. It can be a cheap artifact if you need that. So it can go into like improvised decks as well. It's a card that just sort of fits into a lot of different decks. And it's good enough to fit into all of them. It's not going to be a key piece of any given deck, but it's sort of the Robert Ori of the set.
Perfect. We'll leave it at that. Robert Ori.
Did people get that reference?
Of course. Dan will, but I do.
I don't get it.
Thank God.
How many rings does it have? 5?
9, I think.
9?
Isn't it some ridiculous number?
Jesus. I don't think so. I think only like the Celtics team with from back in the day had 9.
7.
7, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. That's a lot of rings for a guy who didn't do that much, but he helped just enough. Hit some big shots.
Yeah, and he's one of two people to have won championships with 3 different teams.
Yep. Spurs, Lakers, Bulls, right?
Rockets. Yeah, the two the Rockets won while Jordan was quote-unquote retired. He was on those teams.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't Spurs?
So it was Spurs, Rockets, Lakers. He was never on the Bulls.
Oh, what am I? Oh, you're right. You're right. Okay. We got there. Robert Ori for our two listeners who understand the reference, who are also our two listeners.
Yeah.
Metallic Mimic, sure.
Overrated.
Yeah.
I've tried it in a deck or two, and it might make it in, but I've seen people put like 4 of them in various decks. I never want to play 4 of this card. It's a 2-mana, 2/1.
Being a reverse of Thalia's Lieutenant is much worse.
I think this is printed for EDH casual play. This absolutely goes into basically any tribal deck.
Yeah, but like people saying it'll see play in Merfolk are insane.
No, crazy.
And the last card I want to talk about, Ross, you're going to get to sell me on this one. Inspiring Statuary.
This is a strange card. There's potential here with this card. I'm not sure if it's ever going to be realized.
I think someone's going to break the shit out of it.
Yeah, this is a card, and it's not a card that I have explored with yet, but I'm not sure I'll get a chance to because I have several things I want to work on, and you can never get to everything. Mm-hmm. But I would not be at all surprised if this card is really good.
3-mana artifact with improvise. Non-artifact spells you cast have improvise.
It's such a weird, but like I've never been good at building decks like this, so I don't know. It screams like broken to me.
Yeah, like there's something.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure what that something is, but
it feels like there's a tension there because, I mean, to make improvise good, you have to have a critical mass of artifacts, but it's giving your non-artifact spells improvise.
Yeah, that is the rub.
Yeah,
and that tension is why it's going to be difficult to. Again, you have to. It's one of those cards you have to find the right balance of stuff to do. I know Majors has he built like a ramp shell with it with SRAM's expertise, just trying to cast Ulamog as quickly as possible.
I did see that list. Yep, that was cool. Like I think there might be even like something else, like just a combo. I don't know.
I don't know if there's really a combo. I think, again, if you look, you just want to mainly look at colorless cards that aren't artifacts. So Elder Deep Fiend is an option.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Or it can just potentially be a reasonable mana rock if you need it to be. I'm not sure.
I just envision a world where I sit down at like a PTQ or something and someone casts this card on turn three and I'm just like, oh shit. Like, you know, you're just, something's going to happen and you're dead. Like, yep. Someone will figure it out at some point. We'll see. That's what I had for the set.
So what were your overall feels, Mike? I know you had that in the notes that you sent me.
I thought the set is incredibly underwhelming for the amount of hype it has received. Some of the worst rares and mythics ever in a modern Magic set.
Yeah, I think it's a set that's mainly going to be defined by the depth of its commons and uncommons, which is a pretty common evaluation.
But like, if the Felidar cat like wasn't in this set, I don't think this set would have had that big of an impact, especially without bannings. I think it would have done actual nothing.
Without bannings and without the combo, you are probably correct.
Yeah.
But that says more about Emrakul and Copter than it does anything else.
Yeah.
I mean, you would probably say the same thing if you just put this, like, swapped this set with 100, how many cards in it? Like 165?
Mm-hmm.
If you swapped this set with 165 cards from Kaladesh appropriately, but left Copter in, you would probably say the same thing for those 165 cards, because Copter just outshines all of them.
Fair, in a way, like that it made, like, Torrential Gearhulk is just unimpressive in that world. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did win the Pro Tour, but.
Yeah.
Beating itself in the finals. But.
And then what did it do after that?
Not much.
But. Not much. It had a rough time. Still a wonderful card and will be much better in the coming months of this format. I want someone to break Herald of Anguish. I think that's such a cool card.
Yeah.
It's up to you, Ross.
I've been happy with it.
Dan, any final feelings on the set now that everyone's sleepy and we're slowly
fading?
Yeah.
Nah, not a whole lot. I'm like completely overjoyed for Fatal Push because it does all the things I want to be doing when I play Modern.
Okay.
None of the things I want to be doing when I play Modern. That's exactly. I don't want to kill your creatures. I want to kill you.
Well, there you go then. I don't know. I like Fatal Push. It goes into the kind of decks I like to play. So, I mean, other than that.
One of you likes foils. One of you likes playport cards. And one of you likes midrange decks. Those are the three things in Magic I despise the most. Top of the list.
We work all together so well.
Top of the list.
And I mean, like,
people not pushing their chairs into tournaments.
I don't think there's anyone who doesn't hate that.
That's kind
of
annoying.
That is just bad manners.
Yeah.
Nobody talks about it. It is my number one pet peeve at tournaments. People not pushing their chairs in.
Next episode, we will give you 5 minutes to rant about whatever you like right at the beginning of it.
Maybe
I have a list.
We will give you 60 minutes to rant about whatever you'd like.
We'll have you do a top 10 rant list of things that piss you off at tournaments.
People who thought sees you, look at your hand, think for 30 seconds, say, I'll take that card. And when you go to pick your hand up, and say, oh, wait, I want to write it. I want to write it down. I'm really close to just saying, no, your spell is resolved. This is my hand now.
Well,
I'm going to do it to someone and they're going to get really mad at me and it's going to become a thing. And I'm going to get either eviscerated on Reddit for it or they're going to love me.
Oh my!
You call a judge for a slow play.
That'd be on my list. Reddit. I hate Reddit with all of my heart.
I'm much kinder to Reddit than most people are.
I don't know. I just remember the Sphinx's Revelation thing, where they wanted it to be an enchantment, or maybe that was Mythic Spoiler. I could be getting that wrong.
An enchantment?
That was probably Mythic Spoiler.
Yeah.
Why would it be an enchantment?
Well, because they wanted it to be a 3-mana enchantment where you paid X and drew X cards and gained X life, because it wasn't as good as it was.
What?
Yeah.
That was the complaint when the set first came out. No joke. Yeah. The best card ever printed.
We have actually rendered Ross
like, that would be like the actual best card ever printed.
I think you might have killed Ross, Mike.
Yeah.
Just do that. Like, anytime I got a spare mana, I'm like, yeah, I guess I'll draw a card.
I'll just draw a card and gain a life.
That would be terrible. Yeah.
That's good to use all my mana every single turn. You just never get to win.
It's good that some people aren't designing magic cards.
Yeah, it's good that a lot of people aren't designing magic cards.
Yeah.
99% of people. It's really good that they have no input at all.
Well, we probably should wrap this one up, seeing as it's 1 a.m. on this nice East Coast.
Well, I got to work in a few hours.
Yeah, I've got to work, but not for a while yet.
Okay.
Yeah, I have to go into work in 36 hours.
Ooh, that's going to
be tough.
Yeah. Make sure you get enough sleep in there somewhere.
It's going to be real tough.
Ross, thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
We'll definitely see you with the next set, Amonkhet, whatever, if not before then.
Yeah, that's a set that might get me on the flavor, by the way. Any mythology will get me. They had me in Theros Block, so Egyptian mythology might get me too.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. There's supposedly going to be gods in it again. I don't know if they're going to be enchantments or not, but...
Probably something to do with the movie Stargate.
Yeah, so we'll have artifacts and divisions.
I hope there is at least one Stargate reference in that set somewhere. I'll be very sad if there's not.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, it's a movie. It had James Spader in it.
Yeah, well, I like James Spader.
And then the TV series had MacGyver in it. Both were very, very good, actually.
See, I loved Stargate as a kid, and I have not seen it since. And I don't want to. I want to leave it as perfect in my mind.
Keep it pure in your mind. I like
that. Yes. Is it terrible?
No.
It's not.
Amazing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've watched this. I mean, I watched Stargate as an adult, the movie.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic.
Okay.
One of the few movies with James Spader in it where I actually like his character. He usually plays colossal douchebags.
Yeah, he was kind of just like nerdy.
Yeah. Yeah, he was just kind of this nerdy archaeologist, and he was very likable. It was awesome.
All right.
And what's his name? Opie was in there. And kind of like how I can remember the character that he played when he was like 9, but I can't remember the actor's name. And no, that was Ron Howard that was Opie, wasn't it? I'm getting confused. Anyway, movie was good, and then the follow-up series that starred MacGyver was also very good. So,
well,
anyway, you going to sing us out or something, Ross, or are we just hanging up here?
What am I supposed to sing?
I don't know. One of the songs?
Even Flow?
Carol? Sure. I have no idea.
So let me put it on.
Yeah, pull something up here.
Lights out! A fucking rock concert! Oh no, it was supposed to have lyrics. Hold on.
Thank you for not falling asleep for this one, Ross. I forgot that.
I've been staying up really late recently, so just to prepare.
Perfect.
Let's get to it. Concrete. So free. Maybe. Am I doing well?
Hey, beautiful. It's indistinguishable from the original.
I can't tell the difference.
I actually feel like I'm at a live concert right
now. I do. Oh my god. It's like he's in my home.
Oh, entirely worth the price of admission.
Oh, no. Oh, he chases them away.
That's our show, everyone. Thanks for tuning in.
Good night. Keep up the conversation. I was just fixing myself a beverage, a nice glass of chocolate milk.
Oh, I'm drinking a little wine myself.
Well, both of those beverages contain large amounts of sugar, but mm-hmm. in different forms.
It's true.
That's about as far as the comparison goes. Have you heard the story that climate change is giving us actually some fantastic English wines now?
I think I told you that.
Oh, did you? I heard it on Star Talk.
Oh, I would say it's giving us spectacular wines. What's happening is that there are several large Bordeaux houses that have made investments in southern England because the climate there has shifted so radically that it now resembles what they imagine will be really prime growing territory for Bordeaux style wines, essentially.
Yes.
It will be interesting.
The fellow on the show that I was listening to related to the story that it used to be said of English wine that it would take three people to drink it. One person to hold the man down and the other person to pour the wine in his mouth.
You know, it's a lot like, well, historically, it's a lot like wine from Massachusetts or New England in general, which is to say that what we consider to be wine, we simply don't have the climate for. I mean, we just don't produce. It's just not hot enough here to have a proper growing season. Oh my God, have you seen Rogue Refiner?
Rogue Refiner? Oh, the card?
Yeah. 3 mana, 3/2. When it enters the battlefield, draw a card and you get 2 energy, and it's a 1 blue, 1 green, 1 colorless.
I think I heard it mentioned. I was listening to the set review, the limited resources set review, and I think they mentioned that and kind of freaked out about it.
Yeah, that's a lot of card.
Yeah. That is a whole lot of card. It's gold, but still.
Yeah. Sorry, got distracted. Most of what has historically grown in Massachusetts is like a lot like what Germany grows, sort of cold whites and the like. And that's just not, you know, in a world that deified what Bordeaux was making, sort of ruddy, low acid whites that often sort of tended towards sweet is simply not what anybody was looking for. So in England is much the same way, and much like England, there's people growing Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot and Pinot Noir in Massachusetts now, which is, I mean, you'll have to take my word for this, but fucking nuts. That's nuts.
I will absolutely take your word for it. I know very little about wine, so.
It's very upsetting.
Yeah.
It's worse because I can't even share that information with people. Because if I tell them that story, they lapse into the, well, hey, you know, at least there's something good happening. I'm like, no, there's nothing happening, because that means that all the places that used to be perfect for wine will no longer be able to produce wine. There's nothing good about this. There's making do with what's happening, but that's a shitty thing to celebrate.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. Talking about how the Midwest will someday have oceanfront property is not.
Yeah. Your not value system is a little off here.
It's the old human race.
Mm-hmm. Why are there so many ostriches? I was promised